Hello, amazing men of Carlos's program. My name is Alana Pratt. Thank you, Carlos, so much for the opportunity to talk to these great guys. I've decided today to talk to you about two things. One, overcoming any blocks you have about your culture, and two, overcoming any inner roadblocks you have to feeling absolutely at peace in your sexuality. So first off, about the cultural roadblocks that you might be experiencing. As a quality woman, I thought, what is the unique perspective that I can bring you? So I thought I would tell you a little bit about my past and how I feel about different men from different cultures. Well, the first memory I have is being about 20, living in Japan, and going to my first love hotel with a Japanese man. And in Japan, you can you press these little buttons and you can rest, it's like 3 hours, or stay, I think it's like 7 or 8 hours. There's a room, it's all a theme. Press the button you want, you go in, they give you the key, and there's this little like place you put the money, and then it like goes away on this like suction thing, and then it like comes back. It's crazy. But I just remember he had almost like a sweet awkwardness to him, but then once we were in the love hotel, he was like so present and amazing, and it was so mysterious because we couldn't speak English, or he couldn't speak English, I couldn't speak Japanese. So it was just based on feeling and touch and presence. Totally hot. Went a couple times. Another memory I have is going to Thailand and being in one of those little buzz boats to get you to the little island in the middle of nowhere, and there was these two hot Italian guys, and whatever, I did my thing, and the next day I was out swimming and I saw one of them, the one I liked, coming towards me. I'm like, oh, he's coming towards me, keeps coming towards me, comes right up to me and starts kissing me. Hot. You know, went to Milan later to visit him. Another time on a modeling shoot when I was living in Japan, I was on my stool getting my whatever done, and the hair guy, who, like, all hair guys are supposed to be gay, right? No. So he comes up, he puts one foot in between each of my thighs and just presses his body up against me, and then he starts plucking my eyebrows. So it's like this pain and this pleasure. So I went to Paris, had a little fun with him in Paris. Hot French guy. Again, not a lot of language, verbal language going on, but a lot of just being willing to be with them in their culture, in the unknown, trusting myself. Oh, it was delicious. I loved being in Japan too. A lot of the guys from Maersk, you know, the shipping company, would come in, a lot of expats come in and drink, and I just remember them being such tall, big, Northern European, hot, drinking, Viking guys. I really quite enjoyed their, sort of like their brotherhood, and how they would just make me feel so safe and so adored. So much humor. I also loved going to the Hong Kong Sevens. It's a big rugby tournament in Hong Kong. And there was just groups of men from every country, every color of skin, every culture. Just was like, it was like a candy store. And to watch them be rugby players and grunt and do their things and pull off each other's ears, you know, not so hot, but just being at the bars and just seeing men in their bodies, present, brothers, traveling, different cultures from all over the world. I need to say that there wasn't one that was better than the other. It was more of them owning who they were that was hot. And I'm Canadian, so I just have this thing. It's probably been, you know, stamped into my DNA and imprinted at some point, but I love hockey players. I don't know what to do about that. I just do. And cowboys. I love cowboys. It's kind of where I grew up. However, I also love, we used to go to powwows where the Native American men would, you know, dress up in their whole garb. And I just remember thinking they were so beautiful, their dark skin and long hair and leather and dancing and being at one with nature. It was very hot. And I remember even as a young girl having, like, I don't know, Pocahontas or those kind of dreams, but man, very, very hot. And then of course there's black men, African American men, whether I was actually traveling in Africa and meeting them there, or whether it was just in LA or wherever. Even there's a guy that coaches my son's basketball at the local rec center. He's just so in his body and just so talking good shit to the kids about You know, respect your parents and do your homework, and basketball comes next. You want a scholarship? Well, they're not going to hire you for a scholarship if you don't get your grades done. He's just solid. So, also, haven't slept with him, don't worry. But I've thought about it. But I hope you don't think I'm a floozy. I'm just sort of giving you my sexual history and desire. And I do this so that no matter what your heritage is, if you're black or if you're Asian or if you're white or if you're red or whatever, it's not about that. It's about you being at peace, claiming and loving the best qualities about who you are. There's even my Indian, one of my spiritual teachers, Satyan Raja, is Indian. And I think every woman at some point, he's totally married to Suzanne, but like at some point, every woman has a little fantasy about Satyan. So like there hasn't been a culture that hasn't turned me on, really. And I want you to embrace the uniqueness of who you are, not worry about what other people are thinking. The minute you start worrying about what other people think is the minute you give your power away. And there's nothing to be taken personally if some women like one kind of cultural guy over another. I remember back in Japan when I left, there was a bunch of, you know, great guys I was hanging out with, and a lot of them stayed. They loved Japanese women, or they moved to the Philippines, or they moved to China, or they moved to Korea. They loved Asian women. There's nothing wrong with me that they chose Asian women. That's just what they like. So it's not personal. And so instead of concern on the outside, go in and claim the best parts of who you are on the inside, and then just be yourself, okay? Part two, about sexual, you know, the inner game blocks to your sexual freedom. I do a lot of deep work, and I'm not sure if you know, so I coach men very deeply. I have other programs as well, but coaching is magnificent because I go right to the core, sit right in the fire with that big piece that's always in the way. I'll give you a couple examples. One client had this pattern of only going out with women that he wasn't really interested in because they were safe, but he didn't say it that way. Or he didn't have the confidence to go after women he really wanted because he was afraid, but he wouldn't say any of that. That was just the pattern that was going on. And as we got deeper into sessions, what I learned is that his area of shame was that in the past, he used women for sex. He didn't rape them, but he would say, you know, yeah, I'm interested in a long-term relationship, when he wasn't. He just wanted to get laid. And there's nothing wrong with getting laid, okay? There's nothing wrong with one-night stands. Sex is awesome. Your sexuality is magnificent. But you need to be in integrity with your truth. And he was admitting to me, if I'd actually told the truth, I bet you a lot of those women wouldn't have slept with me. And what we realized was that guilt of what he's done in the past was in the way of showing up profoundly and intimately with a real partner, because he'd have to bear the truth that he's not perfect, that this is what he's done in the past. And he hadn't come to peace with it, and he hadn't forgiven himself about it. So what I did is I created in a session, and you can do this in your own mind, is I created a temple of forgiveness. And all the women that he'd lied to were there. And I said, go in and apologize. And he's like, oh, no, no, no. They're hissing. I said, go in. I'll come with you. And we walked in, and I was just there, almost sort of like this divine feminine figure behind him, holding the space. And I said, hear what they have to say. Hear how much your behaviors made them feel like a piece of meat, not a piece of art. Be with it. Be with the consequence of your actions, not to judge you and make you wrong, because all of us are these ever-evolving creatures. Everybody makes mistakes. But just so that you can be at peace about this. So he said his truth to them, and he apologized. And then I said, tell them why you did it. And he's like, I don't really know why I did it. I just wanted sex. I go, well, go deeper than that. There was a void in you, and you wanted it to be filled in this delicious sexual way, but you didn't have the courage to tell the truth about really what you wanted. So that was an area of weakness that you were unwilling to step into and be courageous, not a coward, and absolutely tell the truth. Tell them that's why you lied, that you didn't access your power yet. You were afraid, and you lied because of fear. So he told them all that. And something shifted in the women when they understood the why. Because they're all thinking, you know, if they're angry still, they're just thinking he's an asshole, which isn't true. He's a great man. He's just afraid. And then the other thing they were thinking was something was wrong with them. They weren't worthy. They weren't pretty enough. They started to make it mean all these things about them, which it didn't have anything to do with that, right? So you could see a shift happening in the women as the shift was happening in them. And then the last part, I said, tell them what you're doing now. And he's like, I'm taking full responsibility for my life. I want a profound relationship with a woman, and I'm willing to do the work to forgive myself and let the past go and learn how to be a courageous man, be in my confidence, speak my truth, no matter where it is, with women at work all the time, so that I can look myself in the eye and respect who I am, and thus attract a woman that respects me. And when he said that, it was just like he was owning it. He wasn't judging himself. He wasn't hiding. He was just beautiful. And the women, they forgave him. And then the temple dissolved, and he's free. He's free now to have the courage now, access to the courage and the ability to step up in front of a woman he really does want and say, this is the real me, the good, the bad, the ugly. And that kind of love of self, I call it, it's like an unwavering confidence. It's a sense of nobility. Come what may, I can handle it. You know, it's sort of like that rough swagger of an Indiana Jones when he comes through the battle or comes through the fight. You know, it's the battle wounds and scars and roughed upness that makes him sexy. It's not about being perfect. It's about going through it, taking responsibility, cleaning up your messes, and stepping forth again and showing up. That's sexy. So if your sexual blocks have anything to do with guilt, I encourage you to do some private sessions with me, or just go through on your own and do that visualization, because it can be very powerful and freeing for you. Some other sexual blocks that I run into with my private clients is that they're just ashamed of their darkness. They have repressed it, and they clearly don't want to rape women, but there's a real animalistic, primal part of them that they've never let out. They've been, maybe they tried it once and they got emasculated, or, you know, they've been put down because of it. Anyways, there's shame around their darkness. So what I'd also take them through similar deep guided meditations and visualizations to heal that inner part of them, which is key. But then the next thing is, I'm like, get out there and start doing some different actions, like different tantra classes. Start to realize that you can be in your heart when you're dark, or in your heart when you're in your more light, tender, sweet, or in your grab the back of her hair and you know, throw her up against the counter. So long as your heart is connected, she's going to respect you and feel safe. If you disconnect your heart, if your heart is wounded, still there's still shame in there, or anger in there, or sadness in there, and you do those behaviors, it's going to feel like violence, and she's going to get as far away from you as possible. So first is always the inner work, but then start practicing maybe tantra classes, maybe even have a relationship and be very authentic about it and say, I want to have a breakthrough in my sexual expression. I want a partner for this. Would you like to be this person? And together we explore sexuality together in a safe, contained, free environment. I've said that to many men. Some men even come to me as virgins and or very inexperienced, and they're older, so there's this, oh, I should know more. Well, there's so many products out there, from Carlos to all sorts of other guys, about the technique, and that's very important. But who you're being in it all is the most important key. So you want to go in and have love and compassion and tenderness and understanding and validation for that part of you that feels awkward. He does. There's a part of you inside that does feel awkward. There's nothing wrong with that. Everybody feels awkward when they're in a new situation, and trying to bypass that and overcome it with all this swagger on the outside, you're a fake, and women can smell it. And then you get nervous. Then you have, you know, you can't perform, and it's just a downward cycle. So I say, go into a safe environment with a coach like me, some situation where you can come to peace with the one inside who's uncomfortable, and make that not wrong. Just as if you had a son who was 18 and didn't really know, and he walked in, he goes, you know, dad or friend, uncle, I gotta talk to you about this. You wouldn't say, you're an idiot, stupid boy, figure it out. No, you'd be like, I get it. The first time is kind of, it's a little uncomfortable. Like you'd love him, you'd nourish him, you'd teach him, you'd guide him. Well, you got to do that to the part inside of you that's blocked. And if that's too hard to do on your own, sexuality is so amazing, and it's so natural and so beautiful, and I want you to be fully self-expressed for your own pleasure and for the extraordinary pleasure you give women. If that's still an issue, you got to do your work. You got to go deep inside and handle these things and come to peace with your biological wiring. You're wired to want sex. There's nothing wrong with that. It's beautiful. You're meant to penetrate the world with who you are as a man and live your legacy. And you're meant to penetrate women and bring us great pleasure. But you've got to be at peace with that desire, you've got to be at peace with the past. You've got to be at peace with where you are. So if you can start with peace and acceptance and validation and understanding, love, even celebration of exactly where you are, that's the point of power right here, right now. And from there, efficient, effective results can happen. So go into the fire, tell the truth, love all these parts of you. Do your inner work, and from that foundation of fullness, that's when it's an authenticity and a confidence from your core, that when you add any tips and tools and practices you learn from Carlos, when you add those two together, the inner and the outer, and Carlos has a lot of inner game stuff too, but you know what I'm trying to say, this yin and the yang, when that's there, you're the man who walks in a room and the women are like, ooh, who's he? Because you're real. You're at peace with the moment. Come what may, bring it on. And that's when a woman says, take me if you dare. She doesn't say that to a man who's not at peace with who he is. And that's just how it works. So I hope this was helpful. Carlos has a lot of ways that you can get in touch with me should you want to. Know I believe in you and I honor you for showing up and doing the work, for taking action and being a part of his program. And I thank you for taking time to listen to me today, because nothing makes me more juicy, alive, and humbled than to watch a man in his power. That is, you're like the banks of the river for us women in this world. We need you, and thank you for your time and for doing your deep work. All my love.
Hey, how's it going, man? My name is Joshua Pellissier. I'm the author of The Tao of Badass. And today I'm going to be giving a special presentation to you on what I believe is one of the most difficult parts of sexuality for men, and that is what's called escalation. This is sort of different ways and techniques and skills that you learn over time in order to allow you to take it from sort of being friendly with a girl to being sexual with a girl. Now, besides this, there are a lot of other things you need to know as well. Of course, you need to know how to draw out your masculine energy, how to truly, build this alpha behavior that does show a woman that you're a sexual man as soon as you meet her. But regardless of all that, all that knowledge, you're still going to need to know exactly how to transition from rapport, sort of connecting or flirting and things like that, over to being sexual with a woman. So today I'm going to give you a few tools, but besides the tools, I'm going to get into sort of a topic that a lot of guys don't talk about. And that is, there are two things you're actually going to need in order to achieve a result that you really want. So let's imagine that you are a carpenter and you want to build a house. The house is the result. You want to build that. Regardless of what you do, you need to build the house, right? So if you're learning how to be a carpenter, what's the first thing you ask for? Well, I need a hammer. I need something to be able to hammer in nails with so I can put these boards together so I can build this house. Well, let's imagine that you get a hammer. Then what's the next question you typically ask? Well, how do I use this? Like, how do I use this specifically to build a house? And that's when you build up skills. So the hammer is considered a tool, and your skills are what allow you to use that tool to do something great, to achieve some kind of goal. So it's no different with seduction. Seduction is and sexuality is a lot like carpentry, in that you need tools and you need skills. If you have the skills but no tools, then it's like being a carpenter without a hammer. There's really no use. Their skills are no use to you if you don't have different tools to use. But the other way around, if you have tools and then no skills whatsoever, you just basically have a tool shop and you're not doing anything with it. So a lot of guys get into the idea of either collecting tools and not learning any skills, or shunning all the tools and just learning skills. And I'm here to say that you need both. And today I'm going to give you tools, and I'm going to give you a way to learn how to use these tools in the fastest and most effective way possible to really attract a lot of beautiful women with them. So I'll give you some of the skills and some of the tools today, and then after that, you can go out and try it out and practice. So escalation is relatively simple if you know one secret concept. And that secret concept is sort of intrinsic for a lot of people who are actually naturally good at seduction. I'm not one of those people. I was not very good in the beginning at this. I had to learn this over time, and I had to study a lot and learn from scratch. And because of that, I built up a system that works for me every time. And then when I started training other people in this, it started working for other people as well every time. Something that I do outline in detail for the other parts besides sexuality, other things as well, like body language and eye contact and vocal tonality, things like this, as well as banter and stuff, whenever I cover it in the Tao of Badass. But for this conversation here, we're talking about alpha sexuality. And for sexuality specifically, we're going to be talking about escalation. So there's a system for escalation, and you're never going to hear it anywhere else but here, because this is the system that I developed specifically to teach guys how to go from 0 to 60 with a girl. And some guys want to do it as fast as possible. I personally am not in a big hurry. I don't think you should be either. And I think that needing it really fast will actually slow you down, which is kind of ironic, but it does happen that way. So if you are going to use these techniques, be very careful with them. Don't worry so much about how fast you're moving. Worry instead about the results you're eventually going to get. So there's a really wise person once told me that efficiency is for things, effectiveness is for people. That means that efficiency, getting things done as fast as possible, is for stuff to do, not people. Time management is for stuff, not people. So if you're spending time with a girl, it's more about effectiveness, more about what works, not about what will get you someplace faster. It's about what actually works the most at the end. I'm going to give you something that I've tested hundreds and hundreds of times, and I've had thousands of other guys test as well that works really well, and that's called the VET system. V-E-T-T, VET system. You can write that down. If you don't have a pen and piece of paper at this point in this presentation, you may want to stop and get one now because I'm going to give you a lot of information. VET stands for the four different areas that you have to use, four different techniques or tools you have to use that will transition you from sort of normal conversation into sexuality, deep sexuality with a girl. So I'm going to give you these four, and I'm going to also teach you how to use all four of them. So VET is V, which is for vocal tonality. That's sort of how you're speaking, not what you're saying necessarily, but how you're speaking. So you have vocal tonality. Then you have the E, which is eye contact. Eye contact changes drastically when you get into the stage of becoming sexual with a woman. And so whenever you start to do this, you're going to be transitioning from, you know, sort of, you know, you're always going to have dominant, strong eye contact, but you're going to have a different kind of eye contact as you move into sexuality. And I'll get into that in a minute. The first T, so VET is V-E-T-T. The first T is going to be touch. Touch is changing constantly throughout an interaction. And if you do not escalate your touch properly as you go through an interaction, you will fail every single time you get to become physical with a woman. You cannot get physical with a woman unless you are touching her. That's just, you know, seduction 101, really. And you have to, at some point, you're going to need to touch this girl. So it's best if you're touching from the very beginning and you're sort of having lighthearted touch in the beginning, and then you move on to deeper, more seductive touch later on, which I'll get into in a moment. And then the final T, so V-E-T-T, voice, vocal tonality, eye contact, touch, and the final T is topic of conversation. So this is where innuendo and different sort of sexual triggers come in, and you'll switch up from being lighthearted and silly and sort of focus a lot more on being man and sexual. And so let's go over how to use these four tools, because if you have these tools and you know what to do, you know this is what you have to do, I really want to show you how to use them so that you can go out and practice this. Now, what I would suggest is that as you learn these four different topics, vocal tonality, eye contact, touch, and topic of conversation, that you take them all one at a time and you master them individually and then put them all together. A lot of guys I've seen have tried to do all of these at once, and if you try to do them all at once, it'll take you a very, very long time to master this. Instead, get into an interaction and just practice one until you feel like you've got it down, and then move on to the next after that. So as you sort of escalate, if you get like a girl, say you're practicing touch, and you're touching and you're doing your thing, and you get a girl, push your hand off, like take your hand off of her. Well, make a mental note of that and figure out what you're doing wrong. I'm going to give you a lot of tips here, so come back and reference this video and read a lot of other Carlos Suma's tips that you may see. And as you go through that process and you sort of hit these walls, you can ask questions or you can come back and revisit these videos, which I highly suggest you do, and just sort of touch up on the different topics that we talk about and that I'm teaching here. So if you need to learn a little bit more about touch, if you run into a barrier, come back, watch this video, listen to some of the techniques, see if there's something that you're missing, and then go back out and try it again, because it's going to be really, really difficult, if not completely impossible, for you to gather and collect and use and recall all this information that I'm going to be giving to you here now. So keep that in mind. Just jot down as much as you can, and then keep it in mind and go out. And if you forget something and you hit a wall over and over, come back and revisit this video, and you should be able to get past those walls. So let's start from the top here. Let's start by talking about vocal tonality. So there are two types of vocal tonality. Most people don't know this, but you have two major parts of your voice. Technically, you have three, but two of them are so close to each other that we'll just call them two. For the sake of seduction and sexuality, and bringing out this masculine sexual energy, you're only going to need to use one of those. So in normal conversation, you'll hear me now, I'm using what's called my banter voice. This is my first voice. This is my default voice. This is a voice that will allow me to disarm people. It projects very well. It seems very friendly. It doesn't seem like I have an agenda. I'm not trying to draw you into anything because I don't know you. And so I'm not going to come up and start immediately going into my seduction voice, which is the second kind of voice. So the banter voice comes from your throat. If you put your hand on your throat while you're talking, you should feel it vibrate almost exclusively. Put one hand on your throat, one hand on your chest. You should feel almost no vibration in your chest and then only vibration in your throat. Now, this is a very simple conversation mode. A lot of guys who are my size, my build, who have lungs my size and vocal cords my size, are using their banter voice almost exclusively. And it wasn't until I learned how to use my seduction voice that I really understood the power of dropping a frequency that you're speaking at and making your voice a way that women are speaking in a way that women can actually feel instead of just hear. And seduction is going to be very much about sensuality, meaning your senses. So you're going to be appealing to all of her senses as much as you possibly can, including taste eventually, of course. So you want to make sure that you that she can feel your voice, not just hear your voice. You want to combine these as much as possible. And I'll give you a couple of techniques on how to do this in a moment. So this is my banter voice. Now I want to give you an example of my seduction voice. My seduction voice comes from my chest. And this is my seduction voice here. Now, it's a very subtle difference, but you can tell the difference. Now, whenever I move into seduction mode and I begin to speak this way, my voice drops in volume, not because I want it to, but just because I don't have enough wind to push over my vocal cords to really get the volume that I normally would. But it resonates in a different way. If I put my hand on my throat and I'm speaking with my seduction voice, I feel it on my throat and on my chest at the same time. Also, I feel it a lot more deeper on my throat down here than I would normally feel it up here. So whenever you, if you want to practice your seduction voice and you really want to try this out, then try speaking once where you put your hand on your throat and put your hand on your chest, and then try moving from up here, this is your banter voice, down to your seduction voice, which is over here. So you should be able to feel it in your hand as you're talking. It sort of vibrates really, really subtly across your chest. That means that you're doing it right. Now, when you're in a loud club environment or a loud environment in general, most guys will never go to their seduction voice because they feel like a girl can't hear them. But that's one of the biggest misconceptions when it comes to vocal tonality and vocal projection. It's actually more likely that you're going to hear my voice when I'm speaking like this than it is if I speak like this. And the reason why is because this is going to resonate with you and draw you in and make it so that you can't focus on anybody else but me. And that's exactly what I want you to do. I want you to focus just on me, solely on me, and no one else. So whenever you're talking to a girl, using your seduction voice like this and changing your, shifting your vocal tonality will carry you immediately into seduction. This is one of the easiest ways and one of the most subtle and almost undetectable ways to immediately start to turn a woman on. But it's not enough yet. It's enough to get her thinking about sex, but it's not enough to get her actually turned on. So next, I'm going to go into eye contact. And by the way, I'll be using my seduction voice throughout the remainder of this presentation, so you can get a good sense for what it sounds like, and you can get really used to it. Keep in mind, though, if you really want to go back, rewind to the beginning of this video and listen to the difference in my voice in the beginning of this video before I started doing this, and then till now when after I started doing this, and start to get a good idea of how your vocal tonality will change. Also, my demeanor started changing because I've connected all of these different parts of my body, my eye contact, my vocal tonality, my touch, and my topic of conversation. As soon as I change my vocal tonality now, all the other parts fall into place immediately. So eventually you're going to get to that point as well where you can trigger it and it just turns on your sexuality. That's what you want to get to. Next is eye contact. With eye contact, during the early parts of an interaction, it's okay if you look away every once in a while. For example, if I'm going to be thinking about something, if I don't look up like this for a second and think, and then look back at you and answer, then it may seem kind of strange. It may seem like I'm forcing some kind of an answer, which means I may be lying. If I'm thinking of something that's kind of emotional or I'm acting like something is emotional and I'm not looking down, then that could throw you off. Because we look in different directions when we access different parts of our brain. These are called eye accessing cues. So it's a cue to show where in your brain you're accessing through watching your eyes, right? So these are called eye accessing cues. And you read these people's eye movements by looking in which directions they're looking, right? So you look at their eyes, if they look in a certain direction, you can tell what part of their brain they're accessing. So what you want to do during seduction is only look at their eyes and that's it. Now, if you want to pull back and look at their body every once in a while during conversation, you can, but I highly recommend you stay directly focused on eye contact, strictly eye contact, straight, looking directly straight at them. If you couple eye contact and voice, it's almost enough to make up for the other two if you don't do them, topic of conversation and also touch. So these two first are so powerful that it almost will force a woman into being a sexual being around you, even if you don't do the other two. So instead of just focusing on two that we're going to give you all four, so with eye contact, you want to draw a woman into your eye contact. And the way to do that is when you're using your seduction voice, you're using this deep, much more resonant voice, hold straight, solid eye contact with the woman you're looking at. Completely solid eye contact. If you do this properly, she will not be able to look away. And if she does, you can always say, look at me. And she'll have to do it. So look at me is one of those catch-22 phrases. It's kind of like a sneaky thing to do. Because if a woman is looking away, it's likely because she feels intimidated. So if you say, look at me, then she'll feel like she's being weak by not looking at you. But if she looks at you, she's complying. So you sort of win either way, right? But I only use this statement in seduction. Look at me, if she's not looking at me. And then I just continue my conversation, you know. And as I'm doing this, I'm drawing myself in physically closer to her. And with that, I'll sort of transition into the next topic, which is touch. So again, so far, vocal tonality, use your seduction voice, eye contact, hold solid, tough, like strong eye contact. And also you want to create what's called an us bubble. This is where when you're in this stage, as soon as you get this eye contact, it doesn't matter who comes up and tries to interrupt you. It's just you and her and that's it. No one else. Just the two of you exist in the world and that's it. You want to make sure that you create that world for her. If she starts looking away, you don't look away. Not in seduction, not when things are sexual, you do not look away. You're going to constantly hold this eye contact as you build this sexual tension. Next is you're going to go into touch. Touch is interesting because you have different levels of touch throughout the process to help you escalate. If you meet a woman and you don't touch her until you're trying to get sexual, it will almost never work. You will almost never be able to actually escalate to the next level with her. And the reason why that is because when we build trust with a woman and we're touching her, we do what's called anchoring. Anchoring is when you attach an emotion to something physical. So whenever, for example, every time you taste vanilla or smell vanilla, you feel really comfortable. Now that is because you've anchored a positive emotion to the sense of smelling vanilla or tasting vanilla. In fact, actually, it's so powerful with vanilla that vanilla is almost a universal positive reinforcer, meaning that you can have on vanilla smelling cologne or vanilla lotion, for example, and it will automatically make the people around you feel more comfortable, including you. You will feel more comfortable as well. That's sort of a little tidbit trick that not a lot of people know about. So if you touch while you're building attraction, while you're making a connection, while you're building sexuality all the way through from the beginning to the end, then she'll have anchored all of her curiosity, all of her connection and trust, and all of her sexual interest to you physically touching her. And that's powerful because when you get into the bedroom, if you don't have that anchor, that trust there, she'll give you a lot of resistance and she won't want you to touch her. You won't want to go forward with it. And you need to really make sure she knows that she can be safe when you touch her. Like, it's really important that you do that. So in the beginning of an interaction, there's a couple different types of touch. One is called temporary touch in the very beginning. Then it's called lingering touch. And then it's called constant touch. So TLC, temporary, lingering, constant. So when you touch, you want to touch with TLC. So this is very, very crucial. I'm not going to have time to go over the first two since it's just about sexuality. I'm going to go straight into constant touch. Constant touch means that as you become sexual, you're not going to be taking your hands off of her anymore, right? If you do, it will only be for a very brief moment, maybe just to build anticipation. That's something that a lot of guys like to do, and I'd love to do it, is build anticipation with sexuality. So that's where you can take it, you can get a kiss, but you don't. You hold back a little bit, or you go in, then you stop, and you wait just a moment before you kiss her. Now, this builds massive amounts of sexual anticipation in a girl, and escalation For men, usually we try to go straight to the end and try to get to the very end. I'm going to implore you to take your time with sexuality in the seduction phase and really enjoy it and just drink her up. Really, you know, enjoy watching her become turned on, because this will allow you to have more sexual power. So again, if we're talking about alpha man sexuality, not alpha male, but alpha man sexuality, then you have to be comfortable and you have to be very interested and curious and excited by the idea and thought of bringing up a woman to being a very sexual state. So that being said, let's talk for a moment now about how to touch with constant touch, where you can touch, how to get there. So before you're in constant touch, you're in what's called lingering touch. That's the stage right before you go into seduction, where you're really deeply seducing a woman. But the stage right before that, you're sort of touching for 5 to 7 seconds. That's maybe it. Then you're taking your hands off and you're giving her a break. Then you're touching again, and you're taking your hands off. Right? That's called lingering touch. Now, there are certain parts of your body you can touch and certain parts you can't touch during lingering touch, during that phase. And of course, I outline those greatly in the Tao of Badass. But for this conversation, for sexuality, I want to go over constant touch. You can touch in constant touch. You can touch her anywhere that is appropriate for public. If you're not in public, you can touch her anywhere she allows you to touch her, period. And then for constant touch, you are not going to take your hands off. So let me tell you what that means. If you're touching her hand and you want to touch her back, instead of taking your hand off of her hand and touch her back, you're going to run your hand up her arm, past her hand, over her shoulder, and onto her back. This is what constant touch is. It's giving acute sensory awareness to every single part of her body as you cross from one place to another. This is the exact kind of touch that you do whenever you are having sex. You don't touch and then take your hands off, then touch, take your hands off. You're constantly touching, and you're constantly feeling them and feeling their body. Now, again, keep in mind, if you're building this touch and escalating this touch and you're in public, she may be not wanting you to touch her. Different women, different types of women don't like to show public displays of affection. So you want to make sure that you assess it with her. When you're in the seduction stage, you're being sexual, you may want to pull her away and go to a different place, go to a spot when you're two of you can be alone, because it's very rare the woman's going to sleep with you in public, though it's happened to me often. I'm sure some guys, it's happened to them often. I used to like it a lot, but that's just me, and that's my weird thing, so I don't think you need to do that. I would pull her away, and instead of trying to sleep with her in the bathroom or the bar, you know, pull her out, go to a different place, and really, allow the sensuality to not be held back at all. So, again, also, I sort of feel the need to say here that if her body language and her verbal content are saying no, meaning she says no, and she's turning away or furrowing her brow or shaking her head no, then you always stop, always, always, always. If she says no and everything else says yes about her body language, it means maybe. It doesn't mean yes. So you have to really get that acceptance from a woman and that okay, that green light, before you can move on and move forward. Otherwise, you can't do it. You can't move forward. It's really, really risky, and it's really not fair for her. Some women will say no and they'll be smiling, but they really mean no. So you have to sort of calibrate that. Step back until they're advancing on you. And the way to do that is by building anticipation. So when you get the touch, in the seduction sort of sexuality phase, you're going to be touching her constantly and all over. Also try this. This is something I don't really teach a lot of guys, but imagine that the place that you're touching, let's say you have your hand on her shoulder like this, and you're touching your shoulder. Well, instead of just resting your hand there and leaving it, or just like rubbing like this, try moving your fingers around in a way that you might imagine you would move your fingers around her clit as you're doing this. This is really, really subtle and really subliminal to a woman. You start to show this touch, just use your middle finger, you know, rub your finger like this, across her body, and also around in circles a little bit, very slowly, as you're touching her. And this subconsciously and subliminally will sort of cause her to start to imagine you doing that to her in other places of her body. And that's really what you want her to do. You want her to get turned on like that really powerfully. So the final thing I want to talk about is the final T in VET, V-E-T-T. The final T is topic of conversation. This is when innuendo comes into play, and you sort of get playful, but in a sexual way, during sexuality. So imagine this. Imagine that you're having a conversation with a girl and you're talking about where you grew up, right? I may have tell you a story right now, and I'm going to tell you a quick regular version, and then I'm going to tell you a version that is my seduction version of that story. Now, I haven't memorized this. In fact, I have no idea what I'm about to say right now because I have a lot of stories and I'll just pull one up in a minute. But as I go through the first one, I'm just going to tell you a really, you know, harmless version of it. And then I'm going to tell you a version that has a lot of sexual triggers plugged into it, an innuendo plugged into it. And I'll go back and I'll deconstruct the second one and tell you why it's more appropriate for seduction. So when I was little, I grew up in a really interesting place. I grew up in a trailer park. This is a true story, by the way. And as I got older, sort of leaving the trailer park and all that stuff was very, very important to me. I would, you know, go to a new town and I would sort of start a new life. And as I started that new life, I was able to meet new people. I was able to try new things. I was able to really learn new skills and become a new person basically altogether. Like I kept the same name, obviously. I didn't change my name at all, but I would live in a new state, a new place, and found it very freeing. All right, so that's one story, right? Perfectly fine. And there's absolutely, very little, if absolutely no sexual triggers in that. I'm going to tell you the same story, but this time I'm going to embed some sexual triggers into here, and then I'll deconstruct it in a moment. So whenever I was little, I grew in a place of that was really strange and very interesting, and that is I grew up in a trailer park. Now, growing up in a trailer park, I had some interesting topics that I needed to address and sort of remove from my life. Right? I had to reveal them to myself first and sort of let them stand there in front of me and then get over them after that. And so when I turned 18, I moved out and I left and I sort of penetrated the rest of the world in a way that was new to me, that was exciting, that was visceral. And as I entered a new town, as I entered a new city, and as I sort of became this new person, I was able to become new people every time. And I would become the person that I wanted to be at that time in my life. So it sort of got rid of my inhibitions and got rid of all of my fears and my objections. And it allowed me to submit fully to this new lifestyle. All right, so I'm sure you understood that there's a few in there that were pretty obvious. For example, the first thing I said was when I was younger, I had a place that I grow. I was growing in a very strange place. And I didn't say growing up, I just said growing. Sounds like a, you know, I just didn't say the word up on accident. But in fact, that was on purpose. I said as I got older, I penetrated the rest of the world. I had insecurities that were revealed in front of me and stood there revealed in front of me. This is like standing there naked, right? And there are a lot of little triggers like this. Another was I get to become a completely new man, right? So this is, as I'm pausing on these different words, I'm sort of allowing them to sink in to her subconscious mind. And as I go through this process of saying these words during the seduction phase, I'm telling a normal, completely innocent story, except I'm causing sexual attraction during this process. Again, this is something that you don't want to use too much, because if you use it too early, you will actually ruin an interaction. A girl will get a really creepy, weird vibe out of you, and she won't want to hang out with you anymore. Instead, only whenever your vocal tonality's changed, your eye contact is solid, your touch is perfect, and she's really interested sexually in you, then you want to start changing the conversation topic to be like this. You know, not when you first walk up to a girl. This is not right when you first walk up. This is after she's one-on-one with you, and it's just the two of you only in the world. No one else exists in the world to you and to her. And that's when you can start using these. And you can use these pregnant pauses where you're pausing for a bit. Pregnant pause is probably a bad innuendo. Don't drop that in there. Don't say pregnant anywhere. But it's really what it's called, is a pregnant pause. It's where you stop for just a second and you allow that empty space to draw people in. So as you do this with seduction, the way you use this is as you say a word, right before you say a word that's going to be a trigger, or right after you say a word that's going to be a trigger, you can immediately slip in this pregnant pause, right? So you see that slip in pause, this pregnant pause. So keep that in mind. And that's the VET system. Again, vocal tonality, eye contact, touch, and topic of conversation. Use VET whenever you go into seduction. When you're going to be touching, use TLC, temporary, lingering, constant. Constant is the final. That's the sexual version. The other two, again, you can go into greater detail on those if you get the Dial of Badass. So absolutely happy to give this information to you. Go ahead and use it at your own discretion, but also use it liberally. Really let a lot of women experience this this sexual part of you, because it's really your gift to the world. Thanks for watching. And right now, I think it's a good time to stop this video, go back to the beginning and listen to the difference between this voice and my banter voice. I'm going to give you an example right now, though, and I'll switch over to my banter voice for the rest of this video. So thank you very much. I really appreciate being able to tell you this, and look forward to it. Comment if you have any questions at all. I'll get to this as much as I can, and I'll respond back as much as I can. And I hope this changes your life and helps your sexuality. I know the vet system has really completely changed my abilities and allowed me to walk up to women almost instantly and actually turn them on by using some of these triggers. So use them wisely, but use them liberally, and allow women to experience the sexual version of, and powerfully sexual version of yourself and of you. Take care.
Hey, this is Bill Preston from PUA Forums, and I want to talk about something that I know is on your mind, and that is the last 10 yards, which is really how do you actually get a girl home with you and have fun with her. Now, a lot of people think that it really comes down to, okay, I've had a date, or I've been out with this at a bar with this girl, and I need now to have a solution to get her back to my place. And it starts sooner than that. I would say that the last 10 yards is probably the easiest part if you do the first 90 yards correctly. A way to think about this is, you know, almost like Deion Sanders running back a punt, if you've ever watched him play football. You know, he does all his work up front. He dodges people, he runs real fast or whatever. And then the last 10 yards, he's typically high step, and he's got his hand behind his head. He's, you know, showboating for the crowd. And frankly, that's how it should be if you do everything right. So let's talk about the last 10 yards in respect to what you do to make those last 10 yards easier. So right off the bat, you got to think about the situation. You know, who is she with? There's been times where I've met women that would definitely be down to come home with me, but they were the designated driver, or they took a long train ride into the city and they're with their friends and they don't want to, you know, stay in the city that night because they're planning on being home with their friends that night, or they don't want to leave their other friend. Maybe she has to work at, you know, 7 in the morning. And there's just really no way you're gonna get this girl to come home with you, and you know that's just not gonna happen. No matter how tight your game is, there are certain situations where it's just not gonna happen. So I want you to think about the situation you're in when you are, you know, trying to get a girl home with you. And really, it's, you know, ask her questions. Who are you here with? What are you doing later tonight? What are your plans for tomorrow? Those are three questions that you really have to answer, especially if it's a girl that you don't know that much about, because the wrong answer to any one of those will let you know, listen, I'm kind of wasting my time trying to push to get her home, and your time should be better spent either investing in getting to know her or getting her attracted to you, so that the next time you guys are together, she'll be even more likely to come home with you. So let's not forget about that point. It is as important as anything when it comes to trying to kind of close the last 10 yards. So, you know, let's talk now about preparing for that. And this goes back to the original 90 yards. And I have to say, getting a girl back to your place or your apartment, you know, your hotel, her room, whatever, is not enough. Just getting a girl there who's not in the right frame is going to make it nearly impossible for you to kind of finish those last 10 yards. So, you know, ask yourself, have you flirted enough? And is she flirting back? You know, are you guys generating sexual tension? Have you been flirting in kind of a sexual way? Are you touching her? Are you asking her questions that show that you're the type of guy that she's comfortable going home and sleeping with? She really has to be ready to be intimate while you're still out, before you bring her to your house, because you can't just flip that switch. You can't, you know, having just a normal time, having fun, bring her back to your house to show her your art collection or whatever your reason to get her back there. If she's not already in that frame, it's going to be really awkward, and it's going to be really challenging, even for the best seducer or pickup artist or, you know, natural with women, to kind of flip that switch. So while you're out with her, you're going to have to do some of the things that I teach to, you know, get her in that sexual frame, get her, you know, feeling sexual tension for you. And, you know, you can't force that. If you just meet a girl, and even if you're making out, which doesn't necessarily mean that there's a sexual frame or that you're flirting, it can be just a fun make out for her. So you need to establish those things, which I'll cover. And, you know, you need to wait for signs from her. Women are very, very good at letting a guy know that they're sexually attracted, that there's enough sexual tension, that they want to push it, you know, to the next level and go those last 10 yards and sleep with you. So look for those. And frankly, if you do encounter what people call last minute resistance, I would say you either read the situation wrong, you didn't get intimate enough with her, you weren't waiting for signs for her that she was ready to be intimate, and you pretty much, you know, kind of forced it. Because, you know, girls, when they decide they want to sleep with you, it's not going to be when you're back at your apartment. It's going to be when they're out having a drink with you, when they're talking to you. And if you do this enough, you get used to the signs that they give you, you know, the way they look at you, the way they touch you, the way they whisper to you. If they start demonstrating these things, that's your signal to try to bring her home. If you just try to force it and try to, I just got to get her home and everything will take care of itself, it's absolutely not going to work. So some of the reasons why she may even have last minute resistance is, you know, she just met you. She hardly knows you. You know, her friends don't know you. She really doesn't trust you as somebody that she's willing to kind of invest in sexually. Another thing is, maybe, you know, there are some girls that just enjoy teasing you. They want to, you know, they might even come home with you and they just like seeing you frustrated. So they'll act sexy. They'll do certain things, but they have no intention of sleeping with you. And that's okay. There are girls that are just like that. And if you notice a girl doing that, you know, really pushing for, you know, making out and flirting and doing things, but then they back off really quickly every time you try to do, you know, the reciprocal of that, where you try to flirt or try to be, you know, do the exact same things they're doing in terms of, you know, kissing them or touching them or whatever, then, you know, you got to recognize that some girls just are teases, and that's okay too. But I would recommend if you notice a girl doing that, give her a couple chances. And then be upfront and say, you know, listen, maybe this is too early for both of us and I want to get to know you better. So completely flip the script on her. You know, another reason why women will give you that last minute resistance is they could just be, you know, prudish. They want to save themselves for a boyfriend. They don't believe in just having casual sex. You know, there are thousands and thousands, if not millions, of girls that are like that. And no matter what you do, no matter how good of a seducer you are, no matter how much you do the 90 yards, which we're going to talk about, up front, it's just not going to happen that night. And it's okay. And don't try to force it. Anytime you find yourself forcing something, you're doing negative work. You're actually, for every unit of energy you're putting into it, that's kind of the nerd in me, for every amount of effort you're putting into it, you're actually creating a kind of negative result. So when you recognize that, and you recognize that it's not going anywhere, you know, be the first one to kind of pull back and let them know that you're not ready for that, or you don't feel like, you know, being intimate with somebody that early. And that'll actually flip the script on her and have her start chasing you. Now, another situation where a girl will kind of give you last minute resistance is, you know, she might know your ex-girlfriend, or she knows another girl that likes you, or people in your social circle would look down on her for actually hooking up with you. And this one is actually a little bit easier to overcome, because it's really a matter of letting her know that, you know, first of all, you're very discreet. You're not going to let anybody know. It's not going to get out within your social circle. Her friend's not going to know. You know, your ex-girlfriend who she's friends with is not going to know. And you can even say, you know, we shouldn't be doing this. Bring it up first. We shouldn't be doing this because I know you're really good friends with Shelly. And, you know, I just feel so right now. And I, you know, we can do this, but it's really important to me that you don't tell her. Now, what that's going to do for her is show that you are serious about being discreet and that you have the exact same concerns as you do. And once she feels that, then it actually will increase your bond. But if you try to, you know, just shine over it and say, oh, it's okay, don't worry about it, or you convince her that her fear or her worry is not real, then she's going to fight that much harder to defend it. But again, if you recognize it and say, you know, I have that same fear, I'm concerned about what so-and-so is going to think about this, and it's really important to me that if we do fool around, that, you know, that it stays between us. And that one actually, again, is incredibly powerful. So let's talk about kind of flirting and, you know, the 90 yards again. And that's, you know, that again is the most important part of the last 10 yards. So, make sure that, you know, everyone says you have to touch, and make sure you do touch, but make sure you touch correctly. Don't touch, you know, don't paw at her. You know, make sure it's very casual, almost like if you were hanging out with one of your guy friends and you guys were talking about something and maybe he was going through a tough time and you kind of put your hand on his shoulder and talk to him. You know, that's a very sympathetic way of touching somebody, but the same physical motion combined with more of an intimate discussion is a great way to establish that touch and that feeling of closeness. Now, some other things you want to do is talk about things that are designed to get her engaged with you. And I'm going to cover those later, but first, it's good to have sexual tension. It's good to flirt. It's good to establish a sexual frame where you let her know that you're kind of a sexual creature and that you enjoy being intimate with women, but you don't want to release that sexual tension. I mean, sexual tension is incredibly powerful. And what I mean by releasing the sexual tension is building it, and then, you know, let's say you talk about how much you would like to kiss her, and you guys are discussing, you know, your favorite way to kiss, or the favorite place to kiss, or your favorite place, you know, place to put your hand, maybe on the back of her neck while you're kissing her. And that's going to get her thinking about it. That's going to kind of create that tension. But if you then kiss her that way, you're releasing all the tension, and it's almost like a balloon losing all its air. It no longer is this mysterious thing that's in the back of her mind that is creating this anxiety, not anxiety, but anxiousness to actually see what it's like. So the more you can create this tension without releasing it, the more likely she's going to be attracted to you and want to, you know, escalate and become more physical with you. And that's going to happen in the last 10 yards if you do this correctly. You know, an example of that is I was out at a bar on, I think, 2nd Avenue. And I was with my friends, and there was a group of girls there, and we all kind of started flirting and talking, and there was one girl that, you know, I could kind of tell was more into me. And by the end of the night, you know, I didn't really do that much, you know, seduction. I didn't do that much talking with her, but we had both had a couple drinks, and we started kissing, and we spent probably, gosh, we were kind of in this couch kind of in the back, and we probably made out for 35 to 45 minutes. And I'm thinking this is on, right? This girl is ready to go. But I didn't cover who she was with in terms of, you know, the group, what they were actually doing later. So they actually all planned on going back to this other girl's house for kind of a sleepover. And coincidentally, she also had to work in the morning. So logistically, there was no possible way she was going to escape that without, you know, getting a ton of grief from her friends. So that was my first mistake. My second mistake was I released the sexual tension. I didn't allow any sexual tension to build. We just started making out. So, you know, there was really no sexual tension. There might have been some attraction. There might have been some sexual vibing. But there was absolutely no sexual tension. There was nothing really for her to imagine because I wasn't planting seeds of intimacy. I wasn't talking to her. We were, frankly, just a couple of like high school kids, you know, in the backseat of a car making out, which is really bad because it doesn't allow her to actually imagine what it's going to be like, you know, fooling around with me. So by the time the night ended, I said, you know, hey, why don't we go back to my place and, you know, we can grab a drink there. And she basically completely cut me off and said, nope, I got to go with my friends. See you later. Nice meeting you. And I was dumbfounded. And, you know, looking back and even that night, I realized, okay, I completely blew it. I didn't build any sexual tension. I didn't understand what her logistics were. And I, frankly, this is the reason why, you know, this girl is definitely not coming home with me. Another example of a girl who I thought I did everything right. And I bet you're going to think, I've done this too, and I've had the exact same experience, and I don't know what the heck happened. It was a girl that I had met out at the bars one night, and, you know, we'd kind of kissed a little bit, but nothing really happened. I got her number, and a couple days later, I invited her to go hit some golf balls over at Chelsea Piers, which is this little driving range thing on the west side of Manhattan. And we went over there during the day, and I think we went in the bar first and had a drink. They have like a little bar area. And then we went up and hit golf balls for, you know, 45 minutes. And it was really fun. And she'd never really played golf. And, you know, there was just a ton of, you know, the perfect date, you would say, in terms of just everybody having a good time and, you know, doing something she'd never done and everything. But I never created any sort of sexual tension. I never, you know, really flirted with her. It was more just a fun date that you'd see on some stupid movie where they show you this is how a date should go. And it's absolutely not how a date should go. I should have been flirting. I should have been, you know, planting seeds of, you know, intimacy, you know, talking about maybe we could go back to my place afterwards. and drink a glass of wine to relax after that. I did none of that. I basically just had a good time like she was a guy friend, and I did absolutely zero work to create any sort of sexual tension or desire or anything, or even connections in terms of, you know, the same experiences in life. We didn't talk about, you know, where we were from or what our dreams were, or, you know, any of the things that are going to establish rapport for people. So we took a taxi cab back to my neighborhood, and she had actually drove in from Brooklyn, and, you know, we got out of the cab, and I said, hey, you want to come up and, you know, grab a drink with me or hang out a little bit. And I remember exactly. She said, no, you know, it was a great day. Thank you. I've got to go home. And I remember thinking, what in the hell did I do wrong? I did exactly what you would think a girl would want to do. Go do something adventurous, kind of fun. You know, she'd never been there before, but that's all it was fun. There was no sexual innuendos. There was nothing going on that would make me not be her friend. So, you know, that's another example of what you can do during the first 90 yards that are going to completely screw up the last 10 yards. And no matter who I was, no matter how good I was with women, and this was back before I really started getting what I would consider good with women, no matter if I was myself today put in that cab after that really kind of just generic date that a friend would do with a girl, there's nothing I could have done to get her to kind of flip the switch and get into a sexual state of mind. So on all your dates, during the first 90 yards, using the last 10 yards analogy, it's imperative that you inject a sexuality, you flirt, you tease, you touch, you establish rapport and connections. Because if you don't, there's absolutely no possible way those last 10 yards are going to go anywhere. All right, here's another example of actually doing things right during the first 90 yards, so that the last 10 yards are, you know, the easy part. So I remember, and this was actually a girl that I had a date with, or we went and did something before, and it was, you know, I made the mistake of just having fun, not injecting any sort of, you know, sexual tension, not, I don't even know if we kissed, we might have kissed a little bit on the date. I didn't inject any sort of intimacy or touching or all the things that I've been telling you to do. In this case, I met this girl, maybe 3 or 4 days later. And I said, hey, why don't you come over to this little lounge in the East Village? I think it's 2A, which was my favorite place to go. And we met upstairs, and I immediately had us sit down in a place that was really kind of fun. It was overlooking kind of the East Village from the second floor, and you could see all these people in the street. And it was at night, and we were kind of alone up there. I think it was probably a Tuesday, so it wasn't really crowded and loud. It was a very chill lounge. And we just started talking, you know, start off with, I think I usually, will start with a story, and there's, you know, living in New York, there's always a story. I believe I told her about some homeless guy I saw, when I was walking to work the day before, and it's actually a true story where there was this guy, I was walking down the street getting ready to get on the subway, and I saw from a distance what looked like a woman from behind. It had tight leopard skin pants on, and she had long blonde hair, and she was on roller skates and pushing a stroller. And it was the weirdest combination of things, you know, roller skate strollers, you know, tight leopard skin pants. And as I passed this person, I kind of looked over and I noticed it was a guy. And I remember thinking to myself, this is the weirdest place on earth that people can be in roller skates dressed like that with a big blonde wig, pushing a stroller. And just when I was walking by, I think, you know, this is so incredibly weird to see that. All of a sudden I felt this presence behind me of somebody, and it was that same person, and they were right on my tail with the stroller, almost running into me. And I had to turn around and kind of step out of the way so they wouldn't run me over. And they raced by, and I just couldn't help just stopping and laughing to myself, thinking just how ridiculous that whole situation was. I mean, I wish I would have filmed it. So that's the story I started with. And, you know, of course I injected my personality, and I was looking at her, and, you know, I'd touch her on the shoulder or whatever. And, you know, we were kind of facing towards each other, sitting, in our chairs, kind of overlooking the city, just talking about how crazy that area of the city is. And that immediately, you know, that story, which was true, and I you can use that one yourself, but I highly recommend that you find funny things in your life or things that you've seen that you just kind of make you say, what in the hell is going on? And use that as the story. Now, even if it didn't happen the day before, if it happened 2 weeks before, that's a great way to start off a conversation. So you're kind of making things up a little bit. You know, you say, hey, I was walking over here and I saw this. And this, the whole story can be made up or it can be partially made up. It could be something that happened the last time you were walking over there. It really doesn't matter because it kind of gets the conversation going. It gets them comfortable with you and they can just sit back, relax, listen to your story, and they don't have to actually, you know, talk or do much, and they can get, it allows them to just be comfortable because they're with a man who can hold the conversation. Now, after that, you want to talk about more intimate things, you know, where, you know, what do you like about your career? You know, if you could do any job in the world, what would it be? I mean, there's a million questions that all sorts of programs cover. I'm not going to spend too much time on that, but that transition into these rapport building questions, you know, I like to call them also temperature check questions, is incredibly important to do and to participate in with a girl. You're not talking about boring stuff. You're going to be talking about things that are important to them. You know, I'm not going to go into them again, but there's a million questions that you can ask a girl while you're talking to her, and you can answer these same questions yourself that are going to get her in this frame of mind. So I went through these questions. I really had this great deep conversation with her. We probably sat there for, you know, an hour and a half. And mind you, before this date, this girl really had shown no interest in me from a fool around perspective. It was more like I was her friend. But, you know, I did that, opened with a story, established a ton of rapport, was touching her a lot. I think there was even a time where we were talking about something and I whispered something to her, which is one of the sexiest thing a guy can do to a woman is actually kind of lean over and whisper something in her ear. And we decided to go to another bar. And how I did that was I said, you know what, there's this great wine bar down the street. I've only been there once. And which is kind of not true because I kind of took most of my dates there. But I said, you know, I've only been there once. They have this great Primitivo. I really want to try it again. You know, if you like wine, I think you're going to love this place. We should go. And, you know, she went because we were already deep in rapport. We were having a great time. We walked down there and this place was perfect. And I suggest you find places like this. It was kind of an old Italian wine bar. It had these, you know, 2 foot high candles on all the tables that had been burning for hundreds of hours with wax all over the place and, you know, real dim lit, kind of almost, like lighting up on the roof, just kind of making it a little glow, but still very dark and very warm and cozy. And we sat there and talked for a while and just kind of continued the same conversations. I think I told a couple stories, which, you know, you always hear you got to be good at storytelling. And I'm telling you, if you can tell a good story, that's almost all the work you have to do to get women attracted to you is have good stories that are interesting. I mean, I have a story about a ghost in a house I used to live in. I have stories about, you know, and I think kind of the scarier stories that are not psycho scary, that are more like creepy, are good. And especially if there are things that you've done in your life where you've experienced something kind of either paranormal and you can talk about how it affected you, what you saw and how you were kind of scared, but you knew it wasn't real or whatever. Those type of stories are fantastic. I have 3 or 4 of them that actually are relatively true. And I would use those. And that was a great way, you know, after, you know, being engaged with somebody and talking to them and doing some of the touching and the whispering and things really just kind of reinforced that rapport. So after that, I did something that I think every single guy in the world should do. And if you haven't done this, practice it on your mom or your sister or your best friend. It doesn't matter, your coworker. I've pretty much done this on every single person I know, and that's learn the cube. I think there's a YouTube video out there. It's really simple. You're just going to ask a woman to imagine a white room. And actually, before I get into it, any question they have, you tell them, well, it's your cube. So if she says, well, how big is the room? You say, well, you know what? It's your cube. How big is it? Or, you know, what shade of white is it? And again, well, it's your room with your cube in it. So whatever shade you think it is what it is. And you ask them, you know, to imagine a white room. Then you ask them to imagine a cube in it. And you ask them to describe the cube, how it's oriented, what color it is. Is it translucent? Is it solid? Is it whatever? And get their answer and really pay attention. Then you're going to ask them to imagine there's flowers in the room. And again, they're going to ask you, well, where are they? And you say, well, it's your room, it's your cube. Where are the flowers? And once they describe where the flowers are at, you ask them what color they are, what types they are, things like that to really understand it. And again, you got to really pay attention to their answer because that's going to be the key to your kind of cold reading them. Then you're going to ask them to imagine that there's a horse in the room and you want to find out everything you can about the horse, where it is, what it's doing, what it looks like. You know, is it scared? Is it happy? What three qualities describe the horse? And that's really going to help you in the seduction phase, which I'll get to in a minute. Then you're going to ask them, I want you to imagine there's a ladder in the room and find out every single thing about the ladder. Find out where it's at. You know, is it tall? Is it short? Is it leaning up against something? Is it scary? Does it look like something you'd want to climb? There's a bunch of questions like that to find out every single thing you can about that ladder. Then the last question is, you want to say, I want you to imagine that there's a storm. And don't tell them where the storm is at. And they'll probably ask, well, you know, is it in the room? And you say, well, it's your cube. So where is it? Where do you see it? And they'll describe, you know, many times it'll be right on top of it. Many times it'll be, you know, outside the cube or outside the room and it's not affecting it. It could be far away. It could be the storm coming. It could be a storm that's peaceful. It could be anything. Really pay attention to that. And one question that I like to do, and this is kind of a little bit different than what other guys ask, is I ask, you know, well, how is the storm affecting the horse? And that's going to really tell you a lot also. So what all those questions mean, and you can find this anywhere. There's a book written on it. I know Style kind of popularized it, but it is super powerful and you kind of need to make it your own a little bit. And what you're going to do is you're going to, okay, this is what all this means. And you're going to basically describe themselves back to themselves based upon what you heard from their answers. And it sounds intimidating. Do it a couple times with your friends. I think the first time I did it was on a girl and it worked amazingly, but then I practiced it more and I got it down to something that I really became really, really good at. And what the answers are is the cube kind of describes them. So if their cube is small, it kind of refers to their ego. Many times they might not be very confident if their cube is very small. If it's really big, maybe they're very confident in themselves. But what usually happens is their inner confidence or their ego is inversely proportional to how they display themselves. So many times people that are very arrogant will be very insecure and have a small cube. So that's something you can talk about with them and say, you know, gosh, this, you know, that guy you see at the bar that's acting all bravado and arrogant, is really probably just a front because he probably has a really small cube and he's probably very insecure and that's why he acts that way. You want to find out about the direction of the cube. You want to, you know, cause that'll kind of tell you if they're different, if they see the world differently. You know, there's a million things you really have to make it your own. I could give you all my answers, but I think it would be less genuine. So do this a few times and really think if a cube is floating in the air, what does it mean? You know, cause that's really kind of random. So you can then, if a girl had told you that, then you could say, well, gosh, your cube floating in the air is really weird. I've never heard anybody say that. It probably means that you see the world differently than other women and you kind of write your own rules and you don't let even the laws of gravity affect you because you just want to, you know, make your own path in the world. So that's kind of an example of how you interpret what they're saying and give a really interpretive answer that has to kind of come from your heart and can't be just really canned. Kind of quickly, again, you can get all the research you want on this. There's even a book, but the flowers represent their friends and family. So if the flowers are really close, you can say that you're really close to your friends, your family, or people that are important to you. If they're all over the room, maybe she has a diverse group of friends scattered around the country. If they're all the same color, maybe she enjoys hanging out with the same type of people. If the flowers are yellow, it could mean that she's afraid of something. Or, you know, even if they're white, maybe she has really good friends she trusts. I mean, just use your own imagination and that's going to make it incredibly powerful. All right. So let's talk about the horse. The horse is the single most important thing in the room, I think. And that represents her ideal man or her vision of masculinity or however you want to interpret it, what she says. And, you know, if the horse is, big and strong and soft and caring, you can say, well, you know, you really need a masculine man who's caring and going to take care of you, who's you know, able to provide for you or whatever she had described. A lot of times, let me give you a great example. There was a woman who was a really cute waitress, and it's a kind of funny backstory. She was really attractive, and my friend was flirting with her, and he wasn't into the game, and he kind of heard I was, and he was almost kind of showing that, you know, I can attract these, you know, all these girls, and it was kind of showing off. And frankly, it kind of wasn't working. She was just, you know, shining him on, and you could tell that she was playing along with his little games and flirting, but she was doing it just to be polite. And so I called her over and I said, hey, you know, listen, I know it's kind of busy, but there's this thing I want to share with you, and it only take a couple minutes. And if you're uncomfortable or anything, don't worry about it. No problem. But I really want to try this on you. You know, you just have to sit here for a couple minutes. So she sat down and I started and I did the cube on her. And by the end of it, she was, you know, really, really into me. It was amazing how powerful it worked. And what was really interesting, I think the reason why I kind of got her attracted is her horse, all she described was the rear of the horse was kind of poked into the room. And it was a real big horse, but it was kind of stuck in there, and you couldn't see the face, and just literally its butt was in the room. And I said, you know, my answer to that after I had done the rest of the read was, you know, gosh, I'm really confused about your horse. This is the part that is most intriguing to me, is it describes your ideal man. And I noticed she had a ring on. I said, you know, so I know you're in a relationship, but why is your horse kind of outside the room? And she said, well, the reality is I'm going to school. I have 3 jobs. You know, I don't have time for a man in my life, but all these guys are trying to, you know, become my boyfriend or take me on dates or all these other things. And I really don't want anything to do with it. They're forcing themselves into my life. And I said, well, you know, that makes a lot of sense, because right now your ideal man, which is the horse, is perfect, you know, masculine character. You don't have room for in your cube, and it's actually not even in it, but it's still trying to push its way in. And anybody that's been around horses know that the most powerful part of a horse is its legs, especially its rear legs. And that's way, if a horse was trying to get into something it couldn't, it would turn around and literally push its butt into it and force its way in. And I said, I think right now that's what's happening in your life. All the men that, you know, you might be attracted to, you, or even are attracted to you, are trying to force their way in, and it's just not working for you. And, you know, that read, she said, oh my God, you're so right. And, you know, we started talking about other things. And I remember when I left, you know, by that time, my friend was sitting off to the side, just in awe, watching the whole thing. When I left, she actually gave me a hug. And as I'm walking out, she smiled at me and waved and said, you know, you better come back. So, you know, that just kind of shows you the power of the cube and the power of the horse in the cube in terms of how you can really connect with a woman. Real quickly, the ladder represents her career aspirations. And again, if it's a tall ladder, she's got big aspirations. Short, maybe she doesn't have. She's happy with where she's at. Whether she's scared to climb it could mean she's, you know, some people are scared of success. Or if she's really eager to climb it, she can't wait to improve her career and move on and do things. That would describe that also. And then lastly, the storm really describes how she deals with adversity in her life. So, if the storm is right there and it's just fucking things up and it's causing problems, there's a good chance that she allows any sort of problem in her life to mess her up. She's kind of, you know, a little bit mental. If the storm is there and it's not really affecting anything, and, you know, you can say, well, you know, everybody has problems in their lives. Everybody has issues they're dealing with. But you seem like the type of girl who doesn't allow these outside factors to really impact your core, you know, happiness. And then lastly, you know, how the storm affects the horses. You know, maybe she needs a guy, if there is a bad storm and the horse is really calm, she needs a guy that even in all the chaos in her life and the storm messing things up and whatever problem she has, her ideal man is somebody who's going to be calm during that period and help her through it without getting skittish like some horses would get. So that's kind of the cube. I'm obviously not doing the read on you, so you got to make it yourself, your own. You've got to practice on a few people. Those are some tips of ways to think about it. But again, don't just try to copy other people's answers. That's not what I did. I actually asked people these questions, listened to their answers, and then try to actually think about what they were saying and why it would make sense based upon the objects that they were representing. So that's the cube. That is the single most effective way to get a girl attracted to you. Going back to the story of this girl, we're in the wine bar. I did the cube. I can't even describe the look she gave me afterwards. It was a look of, oh my God, I want you right now. It was this kind of smile and just look of passion. And frankly, you know, like I said before, the last 10 yards were, you know, I was Deion Sanders high stepping into the end zone because I literally didn't have to do anything. I don't even know if I invited her back to my place. I think I'd paid the bill, you know, and we literally just held hands and walked back to my apartment. So, you know, that's an example of doing the first 90 yards right, and the last 10 yards are on autopilot. So work on the cube, work on your stories, work on the questions you ask to kind of get to know somebody. And again, they're not interview questions. They're questions that would establish rapport. and the last 10 yards will be the last thing that you're worried about. All right, let's quickly talk about actually the act. So real briefly, take your time. I don't care if you've done it 0 times or 500 times. Take your time. It's almost like drinking a glass of very expensive red wine. There's no reason to rush it. If she's willing to have sex with you, don't try to force it. Don't try to hurry it up just to get it in or whatever. You know, enjoy it. It'd be like taking a $25 glass of Pinot Noir and just you know, slamming it. It makes no sense. So don't do that. Take your time. She'll appreciate it. You'll actually have more fun, and it'll be something that she'll want to do more often than if you just rush to it. And one thing, you know, a good friend of mine taught me this is, you know, you do have to take initiative. Guys are the gas, girls are the brakes. What that means is she probably is not going to just jump on you and rip your clothes off. Now that happens, but it's not going to happen most of the time. You know, if you do everything right during the first 90 yards, there will be times definitely where a woman just takes off your clothes and ravishes you. But you have to assume it's not going to happen and that you're going to be the one kind of pushing the interaction and escalating the sexual tension and the intimacy. So, you know, remember, guys are the gas, girls are the brakes. What that means is your job to push forward, her job to tell you when to stop. And of course, if she tells you to stop or she's not comfortable, the best response to that is you're absolutely right. I think we were going a little bit too fast. You know, we should slow this down. Never try to convince a girl if she's decided to stop, because like I said before, the more amount of energy you put into changing her mind on something, the more she's going to resist it. So, you know, be the one, you know, escalating. Women are expecting you to, but don't force it when she applies the brakes. And, you know, just have fun. It's a fun thing to do. If you're doing it right and you're with the right person and you've done the first 90 yards correctly, it's going to be fun for both of you. It's going to be something that you're probably going to do more than once if you guys choose to, you know, maybe the next night or the next week or, you know, for 6 months, who knows. So, you know, enjoy that time. Know it's your job to kind of escalate things, but respect the fact that she may push back. And if she pushed back, the best response again is to agree. Now, let's talk about what happens afterwards, because this can be sometimes a little bit awkward. So you got to be exactly the same as you were before. You got to be cool. You can't change. You know, nothing has changed. You guys have shared something intimate, but the reason why you did that should not change, or the reason why you got together is because you guys have this connection and you enjoy each other's company and you're sexually attracted. That hasn't changed afterwards. So make sure you don't act like it's changed. You know, don't act embarrassed. Don't feel like you have to be her boyfriend. You're not committed to her. You only had sex. You don't have to act like a wuss now or buy her flowers or any of these stupid things that TV or movies try to show you that you should be doing. It doesn't mean it's going to happen again. It means that you guys both probably had a good time. And if you continue to demonstrate the qualities that you demonstrated before you guys had sex, there's a good chance it'll happen again. But you can't just assume that, you know, now you can let your guard down and act like a slob or not, you know, create sexual tension next time you're with her or flirt with her, that she's just automatically going to sleep with you. Because if you ever slept with a girl and you've done that and then all of a sudden she never wants to sleep with you again, you've probably made one of those mistakes. Just basically nothing's changed. You still have to be that guy that's kind of interesting, flirting, you know, generating the sexual tension with her. You know, it's not, again, just treat it like nothing's changed. Act like you've been there. You know, don't brag about it. It's okay to maybe tell a friend or two, but don't tell anybody that's in her or your social circle that kind of knows both of you. Don't, you know, it's not a conquest. It's something you shared with somebody. And, you know, it's okay to take her to breakfast. But you know, you don't need to act differently. You don't need to be cold to her or aloof or kind of a jerk. And you also don't need to be incredibly needy. You don't want to change. And guys do this all the time. You almost treat her like she's a friend that crashed at your place. And, you know, you wouldn't kick that friend out first thing in the morning. Here's what I would usually do is I would say, hey, listen, I'm playing, you know, I've got tennis plans at 10:30 with my friend Ron. Let's go grab some breakfast or let's get some coffee or whatever. And that way you have a definitive, you know, way of having her leave, because you're not her boyfriend. You don't need to spend all day with her, but you do need to be a gentleman and give her the opportunity to spend a little bit of time with you. And many times they'll say, hey, I've got to go to the gym or I've got an appointment at 9, and they'll make up an excuse to leave. But the right thing to do just give them the opportunity to at least hang out with you for a little bit, maybe grab some coffee, but they know that they're not spending the rest of the day with you. So that's really the best way to kind of deal with things afterwards. And I really think if you follow that advice, it's never going to be awkward in the morning. I mean, a lot of times you might end up hooking up again in the morning, and then you just go right into that plan of, hey, listen, you know, let's go grab something to eat. I'm starving, but you know, I got tennis at 10:30. I definitely, you know, need to come home and shower by 9 o'clock to get ready for that or whatever. You probably wouldn't shower before tennis, but you get the idea. You want to have a plan and you want to have something going on so you have an excuse to either go home yourself or have her leave. Okay. So man, that was the last 10 yards. It's really the easiest 10 yards. I think that, you know, as guys are getting better with women, the first 90 are the part that take the effort. But if you do those right, you literally will be Deion Sanders, high-stepping, you know, holding the ball out in front of you with your hand behind your other hand behind your head, dancing into the end zone, having a great time. So this has been Bill Preston from PUA Forums. Thanks for listening. If you have any questions, please contact me at bill@puaforums.com. Talk to you later, man.
This is Carlos Zuma, and I'm very pleased to bring you one of the masterclass sessions for our Alpha Sexual Power class. And this is one that I know guys are they're stoked to find more about. And that's the topic of threesomes, how to do it right, how to set it up and make it happen. And I've got a very special guest with me today. He's a good friend of mine. We go back quite a ways. His name is Brad P. How you doing, Brad?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me on, Carlos.
No worries, man. It's great to have you finally. I've wanted to have you on one of my programs and finally found something that's just like a total fit. And it's definitely a topic I think that's really, it's just on the front of every guy's brain. I mean, why do you think threesomes are so desired by guys?
I think it's because you get to fuck two girls. It's
just yeah, that's pretty much it, yeah.
What's not to like?
Exactly. It's two for the price of one. I talked about this a little bit in the program. Is it's, you know, there's a lot of things in it. I think it kind of speaks a little bit to the virility aspect of guys. I think, you know, the thought that, yes, I could have two women desiring the same that one woman would want. You know, I think there's that part of it, too. There's a certain amount of sexual virility and power there. But, yeah, two for the price of one.
Yeah, it goes into so many parts of the male psyche. Like, yeah, it strokes your ego. It makes you feel like you're spreading your seed more on an instinctual level. We've been socialized to want threesomes. It's like this ultimate experience that a lot of guys don't get to have, but they always wish they could have. You've heard your friends talking about it. I mean, there's so many reasons why guys want it. Even the curiosity aspect, if you've just never done it,
yeah.
You know?
Yeah,
that's enough to make you want it.
Yeah, just have it a notch on the belt for that one. Well, how does a guy set it up right? I mean, what are some of the preliminary steps that a guy should do, or you know, put into his game to set things up right for a threesome? How does a guy start that off?
All right. Well, there are probably about 5 or 6 different ways to set up threesomes. So, for the purposes of this interview, I do want to focus on one of the more simple ways to do it,
okay.
But just in the interest of guys being open to ways that aren't as easy, you know, in
yeah.
some cases it might kind of just be happening for you, so I want you to be open to that. I'm just going to walk through them real quick.
Okay.
The easiest way to do it is to get two girls who are kind of in a fuck buddy relationship with you already, and it's maybe been, I don't know, between 4 and 8 weeks of hanging out with them, so they're comfortable with you, but they're not trying to get you in the boyfriend zone yet.
Okay.
And to just get two girls like that and just kind of invite them over at the same time and just kind of go for it. Other ways that are a little more difficult would be picking up two girls who you don't know at the same time who are friends,
right.
Picking up two girls who don't know each other at the same time. That's difficult. Getting one girl to go out with you and who you know and who you're having sex with already and picking up the second girl, that is not as easy to do. I think that's the way most people try to go about it. They say, hey, I got this one girl. She'll help me pick up the second girl.
Mm-hmm.
Not that easy because most girls just don't understand how pickup works.
Yeah.
And they get insecure, they feel the other girl's hotter than them or not hot enough. Or so generally what happens when you take one girl out to pick up another girl is the girl you have with you will be constantly raising different objections to every girl that you decide to target. So,
yeah.
You know, there are ways to get around that, but I assume that we're going to be talking about, like, kind of like a technique that'll work for beginners, guys who are, like, beginning to work on threesomes and they mm-hmm. haven't done it before. So I just want to focus on the easy one. The easy one, like I said, is you have these two girls, you've already been having sex with them, you invite them both over, and to get more into detail on that, this is the formula I learned. I learned how to get threesomes from a natural friend of mine named Buzzy, and I interviewed him as well, and you could kind of hear it straight from him if you want at some point. But what he said to do is, you know, you have your one girl who you think is definitely going to go for it, right? We'll call her the horny girl. And then you have your other girl who may be less likely to go for it. We'll call her the conservative girl. Obviously, she's not that conservative, but
right.
She's more conservative than the horny girl. So the idea in setting this up is you invite over the conservative girl first.
Mm-hmm.
Let's say you invite her over for like 8 p.m. So by 9 p.m., you already have her in bed. She's already naked. You already may be eating her out. And then you invite over the horny girl to arrive around 9:15 when you know that you'll already be kind of on your way with the conservative girl. So that you would tell your conservative girl, hey, come over at 8, I got a special surprise for you, and then you just kind of hang out as normal. You start things getting heated up, you know, closer to 9, and then when the doorbell rings, you say, that's the surprise. So now your conservative girl is heated up. She's in bed. She's ready to go. She's not thinking about all of the anti-sexual ideas in her head. She's thinking pro-sexual ideas about how she wants to experience a lot of sexual gratification.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of girls have been told, oh, don't have threesomes. It makes you slutty. You'll get a disease. You should never. And, you know, just general anti-sex messages, like don't sleep with anyone ever until you're married. Don't have sex ever as long as you live. Don't ever suck a dick as long as you live. So there's all these anti-sexual ideas, but they all go away when a girl is aroused. So you want the second girl, the horny girl, to come in at a time when the conservative girl is already aroused. Because
mm-hmm.
this will reduce the chances of the conservative girl getting logical and analytical and saying, but wait, my great aunt told me to never suck a dick as long as I live, so that includes threesomes, so I'm not doing this, goodbye, I'm leaving.
Yeah.
But by having her already horny, she's kind of just going to go with following your lead.
Mm.
And taking the lead is one of the most essential elements of a threesome. You kind of treat everything like it's normal. You take the lead. You kind of tell people what to do in a very relaxed way. And you never make anything a big deal. If there's any resistance, you just say, okay, you go around it and you try again later. So the idea is you have this one girl worked up. The second girl comes in, and then you take the lead. You would say, hey, conservative girl, I want you to meet my horny girlfriend. And as you're doing that, you might just start fingering her again because she's already naked. So then the girls will, like, talk a little bit and kind of establish rapport and chit-chat with each other. And the horny girl might even kind of just start jumping in and taking off her clothes. And that's kind of the setup. I think the easiest way to set it up is just to have two compliant fuck buddies who are going to do whatever you say. And you know what? If you can say to yourself, you know what, if I lose these two, I lose them, I can go get more, and
mm-hmm.
this whole thing should come from a place of abundance and sexual abundance, which I'm sure you covered a lot in your program already.
Right.
But that's the setup I recommend.
Okay. Yeah, that's interesting. That's an excellent way of thinking about it. I talked a lot about in the program how, you want to disconnect from the whole logical, rational thinking mode, because that, unfortunately, is going to distort a lot of your The results you get with women primarily because it's not a realistic place to come from. Of course, if you ask a woman, hey, you want to have a threesome, she's going to sit there and give you the stock socially conditioned response, and that's obviously not what you're looking for here. You're going to look for the one that's a little bit more gut and a little bit more along the horny line, as you pointed out. And it's funny, when you talked about that one mode of guys thinking that they need to go for a threesome being, you know, you go out with your girlfriend, you start hitting up the bars and see if you can find somebody that would be willing to go along with it. It's kind of like the Penthouse Forum letters version of how to do it, right? That's what I think of when I hear that, because it's like everything I read growing up was that's how you get a threesome. You know, you get this one chick that's into it, and you convince her through whatever means possible, and then you go out to the bar and you try and find a willing partner. The way you just talked about it is a much more natural, much more just more a natural progression for guys to get to where they want to go.
Yeah, it's just a little more realistic. I can actually walk you through some of the pitfalls of that, you know, Penthouse Forum scenario as well, because it is possible to do that. There's just some guys just kind of always make the same few mistakes with it.
Mm-hmm.
So I can walk through that a little bit if you want.
Sure. Actually, let's step back just for a second, because there is a little bit of the whole, you know, I tackle inner game a lot with guys. Now, I believe that most guys have an inner game problem when it comes to things like threesomes and just their overall thinking about how they think about them. In other words, he's really intimidated by the thought of a threesome, but, you know, porn movies kind of create this idyllic situation that we all want. How does a guy get past the fantasy part of this and get to the, you know, the real belief that, number one, he can do it, and number two, he can take that initiative that you're talking about, because it does require a little bit of the confidence from the guy to be the one saying, hey, you know what, this is okay, I'm creating a safe zone where this can happen, and it's cool.
Yeah. So do you think guys are concerned about their sexual performance in the threesome, or the ability to lead and create the situation?
Yeah, the latter. I'm sure there is a little bit concern the former as well. We can touch on that, but giving the guy the confidence that he could pull this off, and it's something that he could take the leadership on and make happen.
Okay, sure. Well, women want to do a lot of really perverted sexual things.
Mm-hmm.
The way a woman's brain works sexually is that women have a lot of fantasies all day long. They want to do a lot of things that are sexually exciting, sexually deviant. I think women are fascinated with sexually deviant behavior. I think women fantasize about having sex in public, having threesomes, having two guys, mm-hmm. having a lesbian affair, all kinds of things that she would never own up to or confess because people might say she's a slut. I think women have all these, like, slutty fantasies all the time, all day long, and the only way they can make them come true is if there's a man who's leading them into the situation and kind of making it happen for them.
Right.
Because if a woman gives up her control to a man, she's also giving up her responsibility for what happens.
True.
So yeah. This means, like, she can kind of say, oh, I'm not a slut. I just did it because, you know, this guy was leading me through it. So it's not my fault, and it's like, it's almost like when you're a kid, it's like, I didn't do anything wrong, he made me do it.
Right, it's the plausible deniability, right?
Right, exactly. So since a woman wants to do all these sexually deviant things, but is too scared to take initiative with things, because women are generally pretty, like, indecisive about anything, the only way it really works is if she has a guy who's showing strong leadership. So you really have to lead her into the situation and make it happen and make it no big deal.
Mm-hmm.
And it's actually a pretty complex thing to explain, because leadership is based on dominance. You have to be dominant over the woman.
Right.
And dominance begins right from when you meet, right from the first words you say. And everything you know, dominance is interwoven through every interaction you have with a woman.
Yeah.
So if you want to have a threesome and you want to be able to take sexual leadership of a situation, the first thing you have to do is be sure that you establish your dominance, because that's what makes a woman say, this guy's trying to take the lead. Should I follow him or not? Well, mm-hmm. he's very dominant, so I'm going to follow him. I'm mm-hmm. going to do what he says. And she doesn't think about it on a specific verbal level like I just said it, but subconsciously that's what's going on. A woman wants to find a dominant man and follow him. So you have to begin the process by showing dominance.
Yeah, I've been touching on that in several points in this program, that this communication path that we're talking about, and I likened it to, and this is kind of an obscure analogy, but you know what a yard is, the yard of beer? You know that long?
Yes.
Yeah, it's that long container of beer. And it has like a wide open mouth, and then there's this long skinny tube, and then there's like this reservoir of beer at the bottom. And if you don't drink this thing correctly, you're going to end up in a beer bath. But the analogy isn't that so much, although there is one I can draw to it. The analogy is that sexual communication is a lot like the shape of that glass. At the opening, it's a little bit wider, and there's a lot of things that go into that initial experience of the woman. But throughout the entire path of being of attraction, there's dominance the whole way down until you get to that big end result, which is the sexual, I don't want to say conquer necessarily, but the sexual power and the sexual success that you're looking for as a man. So dominance, and I'm glad you touched on that, it's a really big thing for guys to understand. It's up to them to maintain that, and it's kind of like the fertilizer of attraction throughout the interaction you have with a woman. Now, the scenario you were talking about before, I want to stay with that a little bit longer, because I think it's important the guys get that one, you know, one big aha, the scenario that we're talking about of how they can get that threesome. The one that you were talking about where you say you get the conservative gal come over first, you get her all warmed up, and then, you know, facilitate having the other, a little bit more experimental gal come into the picture. What are some of the kind of mistakes or the pitfalls of that scenario that a guy could run into that, you know, he should be aware of, or what? How can he handle it? And just, you know, just knowing that there's possibilities to go awry in that situation, what should he do?
You know, you're not going to believe this, Carlos, but I've done this a bunch of times, and I've actually never really had it go wrong.
Really?
Yeah, it must be way easier than it sounds or something. You know, whenever I do this, I haven't had any girls like run out of the room or say no or not want to do it. I guess it's all in the way you set it up. You know, I make sure when I set it up that the horny girl will know it's going to be a threesome.
Okay.
And the other girl is going to be surprised, but she's going to go with it. Like it's kind of like if you set it up right.
Yeah.
And you have enough dominance over both girls and. Both girls, here's a important piece. Both girls have to feel like, you know, you're this new guy she started sleeping with, and she's exploring her sexuality in new ways through her relationship with you. You know, you're showing her new things. And as long as she feels like that, it's kind of in the bag. You know, it really never goes wrong. Some girls have ground rules with their threesomes,
mm-hmm.
And that's something to definitely talk about when you're dealing with, like, a girlfriend and you're trying to pick up a second girl or anything like that. But in this situation, there's really not a lot of ground rules because, you know, neither girl can really, like, make a strong claim to ownership over you or put rules on you in any way.
Okay.
So there's not really, you know, in that sense, it's a little different than a lot of other threesomes, but
it's mostly in the setup then is what you're saying, since the setup is so, you know, distinct in terms of how you do it, you're basically just knocking over dominoes.
Once it's set up, you just pull the trigger and it's boom, it goes, you know.
Yeah, well, okay, let's go to the other scenarios then, because you were saying that there were some ways of handling the other situation where we do the penthouse forum method of going out and actively seeking a threesome partner. How would you handle that situation, or what you were talking about with that one?
Okay, this one is filled with pitfalls, and they're kind of hard to see if you haven't had it explained to you.
Okay. Okay.
First pitfall is that your girlfriend or lover or whoever your, you know, your girl number one is often using this threesome thing as just this thing to dangle over your head to build compliance in your relationship. In many cases, your girl does not have any intention of really going through with the threesome. She may like the idea of it. She may be open to it.
Mm-hmm.
But she's just saying, oh, maybe we'll have a threesome sometime. Goes, and then what happens is the guy goes, really? Oh, boy, oh, boy, oh, boy. I can't wait. You know? So in that case, the girl senses that reaction and that the guy has put too much value on the situation. And she says, well, you know what? Instead of actually doing the threesome, I'm going to just use this to get power in the relationship.
Mm.
Because power in the relationship is more valuable to me than having a threesome. I could probably dial up a couple on Craigslist and have a threesome tonight if I wanted to. It's really not the holy grail for me.
Right,
but
true.
Getting power in a relationship is difficult, and if this is a way to do it, I don't want to sabotage that. So first thing on the to-do list is when you're bringing up the topic, if your girl seems open to it, don't freak out and act like you just won the lottery. You have to treat it as a normal thing. You might say, you know, first of all, when you're suggesting it, don't suggest it to your girl until she's already in a state of arousal.
Mm-hmm.
If your girl is already turned on and maybe you're dirty talking to her or fingering her or something, that's the time to start talking about a threesome. And bring it up as a fantasy. Don't bring it up as a reality right away. Let her get used to the idea of it. Let her start fantasizing about it on a regular basis. Then you're in a good position to make it something that she wants even more than you want.
Right.
And that's a real crucial key. The threesome cannot be a present that the girl is giving to you.
Mm.
It has to be something that the girl wants to do too, and you're kind of making her dream come true. Otherwise, it'll, like I said, it'll become this carrot that the girl is trying to make you chase.
Yeah.
But don't freak out when you first bring it up. Don't act like you won the lottery. And when you guys discuss it, always kind of make it something that she's really into. And the third pitfall is putting too much pressure on the girl, making it too much of an obligation on the girl.
Mm-hmm.
This is one that guys really screw up a lot, I think. Here's how it goes. The guy and the girl discuss having a threesome. The girl says she wants to do it. The guy then takes action towards making it happen. And if the girl shows any resistance, the guy will say, well, you said you want to do it, and now you have to stick to your word.
Yeah.
So what that does is it makes the girl feel very pressured, and it makes her just hate the whole idea. So the whole time when you're leading up to a threesome, the key to having her not feel pressured is to make it so it's no big deal and never let it seem like it's 100% that it's going to happen.
Mm.
Never, until it's happening, you just say, well, maybe it'll happen and maybe it won't. We'll see.
Right.
And I had a situation once where there was a girl that I know, and we had a lot of crazy sex, and she called me up out of nowhere and said, me and my friend want to have a threesome. We want you to be the guy. Why don't you come over right now?
Mm-hmm.
And I said, yeah, maybe we'll hang out, and we can explore the idea a little bit. We'll see what happens. The reason I did it that way is because a lot of girls will say they want a threesome. A lot of girls will even make the phone call to make the threesome happen.
Mm-hmm.
But a girl knows that she can bail at any time, and she can throw the veto at any time.
Right.
So when you get there, you still have to make sure the girl is not pressured.
Mm.
She doesn't feel pressured. So it's crucial to just say, oh, we'll see what happens. Maybe that could be fun, and just never make it 100%. For sure thing. That's a mistake a lot of guys make.
Yeah, I can see that one happening. I mean, you got to be cool, and it's all talk until it's actually in play.
Exactly.
Yeah. Well, what you know, there is that other aspect we were talking about, that it's a kind of an intimidating situation for a guy. At least, you know, you don't realize this until you actually get there, but you're in charge of satisfying not just one woman, which is tough enough for a lot of guys, but now you're satisfying two. What is the actual process? The guy's in the game now. How should a guy handle this interplay and, you know, come out looking like the stud that he wants to look like when all is said and done?
Well, that's actually a pretty easy one. In a situation where you're having two girls in your bed, you're actually not in charge of pleasing both girls, because both girls are going to please each other. Mm-hmm. So you can take the orchestrator role in the whole thing and kind of tell them what they should do to each other a little bit and just get them in the mood and facilitate the girls pleasing each other. I think that's a good way to look at it. You know, to get more into the nuts and bolts of it, when you're starting a threesome, the best thing to do is just let the girls go at it for a while. You know, give them a good 15, 20 minutes to kind of get into each other, and they'll be pretty heated up at that point. If you look at the way that women experience sexual pleasure, you know, of course it's very different from men. Women are very interested in the lead up to sex, the foreplay. And if a woman is having like 20 minutes of foreplay with another woman, she's already had a great sexual experience at that point.
Right.
And then if you're jumping in on the action, that's just more of a bonus than the main event. You know, both girls are really turned on. Both girls are having a great time. You know, you come in and lay the pipe for 10, 15 minutes on each girl, it's a home run for them.
Yeah.
And then if they still want some more, they can kind of get into each other all over again. Mm-hmm. You know, so I would say it's actually easier than satisfying one girl, because whoever you're trying to satisfy at that moment, you always have a helper.
True. Yeah.
So I usually suggest, like, take it slow, let the girls do all the heavy lifting, jump in and get yours when the time is right. And, you know, it's, I think threesomes are really about girl on girl action, more often than not. And if you can facilitate that action, make it happen, you're like the ultimate hero, you know, of the whole thing. It's like, wow, stud, I'm sexually satisfied, and this guy orchestrated the whole thing.
Yeah, I'm sure there's a lot of wildly differing perceptions on what actually happens in the threesome. Like, it's this guy, and he's got the chicks laying on the end of the bed, and he just pokes one, pokes the other, pokes one, pokes the other.
Right.
You know, it's like this assembly line thing or something, but you're right. It's more about facilitation and being the it's kind of like you're the director of the orchestra, and you got your little batons, and you're kind of like pointing from here to there what to do.
Yes, the maestro.
Mm-hmm. Well,
yeah. It's not really about, like, being the human jackhammer and, like, you know, hammering both girls for, like, 45 minutes at a time. Uh-huh. You know, I date this girl who's, like, this sex genius. She's worked at all these sex shops, and she's getting ready to put out her own line of sex toys right now. She told me a really interesting thing. I mean, she's read every book and every psychological study. She said that the perfect amount of time, duration for sexual intercourse for a woman is between, I think it was 7 and 13 minutes.
Hmm.
And most guys think, you know, it's all about the human jackhammer, you know, 45 minutes of pounding. Mm-hmm. This girl says, like, according to her research, after, like, 13, 14 minutes, a girl starts to get bored.
Yeah.
And under 7 minutes is maybe a little too quick. But, you know, for girls, it's about this overall experience. It's about this emotional journey. It's about, you know, 20 to 30 minutes of foreplay. Like, that's the meat and potatoes of the whole event for her is that foreplay part, that building process. That's what they're really interested in. So if you go into a threesome realizing that and just really make the build-up part amazing for them, and, you know, it'll start as girl on girl, and then maybe it'll be you and a girl on the other girl, and that's just an amazing thing for a woman, you know?
Yeah, that's
so,
overwhelming.
Who knew? 7 to 13 minutes. Who knew?
Yeah, exactly. And that does make sense if you think about it too, in terms of how you're kind of like creating this crescendo of activity. And a lot of guys feel that, you know, they're very focused on their own orgasm, so they feel that, or they mistakenly perceive that women are also focused on the end result, not realizing that a lot of women just don't need to climax even sometimes during sex. It becomes a different event for them in a way. But, you know, obviously you want to be able to bring it around there. You know, let me ask you this. What are some of the myths about having a threesome that guys might be a little mistaken about, or might be, you know, off in their beliefs in terms of what a threesome's about in a lot of different areas?
Let me see. Well, I guess some guys think that it's got to be this, like, insane marathon, and you have to have, like, the never-ending four-hour boner.
I'm thinking of when I think of this? You seen the movie A Clockwork Orange?
No, I haven't seen that one.
Oh, God, that's a classic movie. It's a great one from, like, the late 60s. It's basically built, it's an Anthony Burgess novel, and I won't go into the details here, but there's one scene where the protagonist, he's this really devious character named Alex, and he brings these two chicks back to his apartment, and they come into the apartment. The scene's really funny because the William Tell overture basically plays over his threesome. And, you know, this is a movie that was rated X in its time, but it's a mainstream movie, but it's hysterical how I think that's, like, the image that most guys have of what a threesome is that scene because of the way it's done. He speeds up the footage, so it's like he's jackhammering, and they're all trading positions, and it's going to the William Tell overture, and it's like, da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da, and he's going all over the room doing this. And that's, I think, one of those big myths is that thing you're talking about, the jackhammer thing. That's the image that comes to my mind.
Yeah, I mean, there's a time and a place for that. You know, you definitely have to, you know, create that crescendo. But you don't have to be like the 4-hour boner machine, you know, because, you know, when you actually do that to a girl, a lot of girls kind of just feel like you're just trying too hard to prove yourself, you know?
Yeah.
And they're really more about like the sensual experience a lot of times. Mm-hmm. But I mean, yeah, you gotta do a little jackhammering here and there, but it's just not totally where it's at for the women. What else? Myths and misconceptions. Yeah, some people think it's like super difficult to set up. I don't know. I don't think it's that hard to set up. I've taught a lot of my students how to set them up. Once they get the idea, it's not that difficult for them. I have a lot of friends who've done them, you know, a lot of times. The guy I learned from, Buzzy, he's done it, last time I talked to him, was like over 40 times.
Jeez. Good track record.
And he's had like foursomes as well, so it's probably not as hard as people think. That's another myth.
Right. I think the key you hit on there was really important, and that is that I think a lot of guys trying to avoid the possibility of screwing it up, they go at it from the logical, rational, I'm going to try and set it all up in advance, as opposed to, you know, getting at least one or more of the women, at least in a sexual state or sexual mindset. You know, it's kind of like they're trying to put a contract in front of a woman. Here's your threesome contract. You said you wanted to do this. Please sign at the bottom so I can make sure we'll actually do this thing. You know what I mean?
Yeah, that does not work. That pretty much screws the whole thing up.
Yeah, exactly. And what you're talking about is exactly the approach that guys need to go into, which is a much more flexible and fluid approach. Hey, you know what? It may or may not happen, but by doing it on a more relaxed, let-it-happen basis, it makes it more likely to happen.
Exactly. The way you want to kind of phrase it and look at it is, you know, I'll try to put this threesome together. Even if it doesn't work out, we're all going to have a good time. You know, everybody's going to feel good. Everybody's going to have a good time. And if anybody feels like they're not having a good time, they can split.
Yeah, exactly.
There's all kinds of like threesome downgrades that are always possible and can get things moving in the right direction. Like, you know, if I was trying to put a threesome together and it just wasn't working, I would say, all right, well, you know what? I'm going to have sex with this girl. Why don't you sit on the couch and watch and hang out, and you just hang out with us, you know, while we have sex. And, you know, maybe you'll jump in, maybe you won't. It's no big deal. Maybe you can masturbate, play with yourself if you like, you know, whatever you feel like doing is going to be a beautiful experience. So pressure, you know.
That's a good one too, because it plays on some other little areas like voyeurism and, you know, that whole thing. So you have some other
exactly
other angles to take it down in terms of our little freak flags flying.
That's right, man. Yeah, that's what I would do if it was getting screwed up, you know.
True. That's a good catch and a good save. Well, after it's over, what's a good idea for a guy to do to, let's say, A, avoid the weirdness, and if there is any, and hopefully there isn't, but also B, increase his chances for maybe a repeat session or to come away with the right experience from the whole thing?
Well, this really varies by situation. Like, obviously, if it's your girlfriend you're having a threesome with,
right,
then you kind of have to go by her rules. Anytime you're doing a girlfriend threesome, the rules have to be explicitly laid out in advance. Some girls have rules like the other girl has to leave, you know, so then afterwards you kind of either somebody's got to drive her home or call her a cab.
Right.
You know, some girls have a rule like you can't kiss the other girl, or you can kiss her but you can't fuck her, or you can lick her but you can't kiss her, or,
yeah,
you know, there's all kinds of rules that girls want. So as long as you play by the rules, you're not really going to have any weirdness, mm-hmm, I think. And then as far as, you know, the more my style of setting it up where it's just two compliant fuck buddies, you just all hang out. And in most cases, the girls will kind of like bond with each other and become friends. And I think that's what really increases your chances of setting up another one. Having everybody have a good experience and everybody wants to do it again. And, you know, honestly, it's not that easy to create repeat business with this thing.
Yeah.
There's so many different factors because there's all these different people. You know, one girl gets a boyfriend, one girl decides she wants to chase some other guy, one girl wants to go full-blown lesbian, you know.
Yeah.
It's pretty tough to get repeat business, but, you know.
But you might take the triangle in another direction. In other words, take one of the girls and then maybe take it with a different third or something like that.
Yeah. Exactly, yeah, and I've done that quite a few times. Like, you know, if one girl starts flaking out, you just add another one to the mix. And
mm-hmm,
if you're meeting girls all the time and you're always bringing in new girls, you're not going to run out.
True, yeah. Again, back to the abundance.
Right. Yeah, if you don't have, like, a 3-girl, 4-girl, maybe 5-girl rotation,
mm-hmm,
you should definitely get a 5-girl rotation going before you, you know, try to start just putting them together. You know, that's a good like primer on threesomes, just having a lot of rotation girls, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's going to do a lot for your mindset and attitude, especially because of the whole scarcity abundance thing as well.
Yeah, absolutely.
Are there any women that just simply will never do a threesome, or that you can pick out like a certain personality type that you're just going to have an awful lot of difficulty doing this with? I mean, even with the setup that you're talking about?
Yeah, I think that girls who are heavily socialized to be sexually conservative are just never going to do it.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's just not in their worldview. It's not in their identity. You know, super religious girls, Orthodox type religious girls, girls with a lot of heavy, you know, family programming. I live in LA, and there's a lot of cultures here where the girl, when she's growing up, her family is constantly telling her, don't be a slut, don't be a whore. If you kiss a guy, you're a slut, you're a whore. And they just carry around such a massive amount of sexual guilt,
mm-hmm,
that not only are they not able to have threesomes, they're just not able to enjoy sex ever,
right,
in their whole life. So a lot of women have been robbed of their sexuality by, you know, really negative cultural programming. And the only thing you can do with that is avoid those girls.
Mm-hmm.
There's nothing you can do to fix them. Don't even try to fix them.
Yeah, exactly. For you guys listening to this program, the girl type that Brad was mentioning there is the one that's really strong on the resistance scale that we talked about, where she's going to have a lot more mental opposition set up in advance regarding the whole topic of sex. It's going to be a guilty topic. It's going to be a shame topic for her. And, you know, like you're saying, it's going to be an uphill battle all the way, and you end up really causing yourself much more damage in the process trying to fix this one woman than just going out and finding one that's pre-set up to be a little bit more willing and acceptable off the bat.
Yeah, absolutely. You want to get a girl who is open to experimenting, and like I said, she sees her relationship with you as a way to spirituality.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the exploration angle is actually a really excellent way of framing it, too, because if she's inclined at all in that way, and most women are, you can definitely leverage that to make her feel like this is a liberation thing as opposed to some kind of, you know, I want thing. The guy wants to get a little bit of, you know, cool action, like we were saying, gets to fuck two girls, yay. It really should,
yeah.
It should be about her in a lot of ways, and that sets it up for what's our motivation for doing this in the first place, right?
If it's just exactly. It's not a present that a woman gives to a man. It's a method for a woman to reclaim her own sexuality from all the people who have tried to rob her of her sexuality by condemning her, her natural wants and her natural needs.
Mm-hmm. Definitely. This is some great stuff, Brad. Is there any last words of advice you want to throw into the mix on just the whole topic of threesomes and guys setting this sort of thing up?
Yeah, there's a certain amount of general skill with women that's required to do this. I mean, I don't think it's something that a beginner who's never really met women on cold approach before should really be playing around with. This is an advanced area. And if you don't have those rudimentary skills, you know, you should work on getting those first. I mean, you should probably spend at least a few months or maybe even a year just getting those rudimentary skills. Carlos, I know you have a lot of curriculum for guys to get those skills, and I have some curriculum as well. I have the 30-30 Club, which is a 12-month program, and I also have something called Pickup Mansion, which is we have a big house in L.A. where people move in and they come and work on their game with other guys and get trainings from me and the coaches. And that's a good way to build the foundation for a lifetime of sex and relationships and happiness and freedom, you know, sexual freedom.
Yeah.
So my suggestion to you would be study Carlos's stuff or study my stuff, but get your fundamentals down. Make sure your fashion looks good. Make sure your body language, your voice tone, all that stuff is working. Because that's what's going to enable you to be in a position where you have those girls who are already your fuck buddy and they want to explore their sexuality with you. So I just can't stress enough the importance of fundamentals and general social skills in this whole area.
Yeah, that's a great point. The baseline skills that you got to have in place are really important just to have I call them baseline, just a baseline level of competency, a baseline level of confidence, and then a baseline level of competence of being able to perform. And, you know, just when you get those things together, and like we've been talking about throughout this program and I have with these guys, when you know that you're sexually competent and you can give a woman what she's looking for, and it's like no doubt in your head that you are the shizzle as far as she's concerned, well, the funny thing is it kind of has this reverse engineering factor of making it really, really easy to walk up and talk to women. Because you know you're bringing the game to the table right there. And I think that's a really distinct reason why a lot of guys have a fear and a lot of problems just even approaching women, is because down the road they're so insecure about what they could do with a woman, whether it's threesomes, whether it's just sexual performance at all. It undermines their confidence all the way back to the start, and it just creates this really shaky sense of self and sense of sexual self that a lot of guys are going to spend a lot of time rehabbing from if they don't get this kind of information down. So lucky you listening to this program. You got people like Brad and myself to help you out. And Brad, your stuff is awesome. I highly recommend guys to get a look at this. If they want more information on what you teach, I know you have this interview with Buzzy that you do. I'm going to encourage guys to go to www.carloszuma.com/threesomes. That's /threesomes, threesomes. carloszuma.com/threesomes. They can get more information from Brad and his excellent information, by the way. I have to really stress, because Brad really does understand this game and can definitely help guys get there. There's some guys that can just throw advice at you, but Brad really does know how to point you in the right direction for success overall. So, Brad, it's been awesome, man. This has been a really excellent call. Like, I think the guys are going to get a lot out of this, especially changing some of their preconceived notions regarding how to get a threesome and how to get it going.
Yeah, glad to help out. I hope the guys get a lot out of it, and I hope to talk to you guys again sometime.
Definitely. So, guys, go on over to www.carloszuma.com/threesomes to get more of Brad P's information, and thanks for this masterclass.
Oh, you're very welcome.
And Hey guys, this is Carlos Zuma, and I have a very special masterclass session for you in the Alpha Sexual Power Program. A very good friend of mine. We go back years and years. I think we met back in 2005 or 6 at Cliff's List back in Canada, way, way back when. And I have a lot of mutual friends now. We've done a lot of work together. I really enjoy his work, and I know you guys do too. His name is David Shade. David, how you doing?
Hey, really good, Carlos. It's an honor to have been invited on by you and to be speaking to your clients, sir.
Definitely. I wouldn't have done this without you, honestly, because I knew that this is one topic that the guys are going to get a lot from hearing you talk about, for sure. But there were so many different places we could go with this, and I think we found one that the guys are really going to enjoy. And, well, before I tell them what that is, and I think they probably already know, why don't you give a little bit of background? I think it's been a little while since we just talked about what it is you do and how you do what you do, and the David Shade pantheon, if you will, of great things you do for guys. You want to give them a little bit of background?
Yeah, sure. I was an engineer working in Detroit, supporting the auto industry, working for the big auto companies and the IT companies to support them. And really, this all started back in 1992. I had been married for 8 years to a woman that I met at work. And we had a great marriage. Things were going really well. We had good sex. It was kind of vanilla, but it was good sex. We had sex every night. And we had two beautiful children. We're both doing really well right now. And we had built a big, brand new brick home in the suburbs. You know, life was good. Life was really good. She was hot, and we were having sex every night. I was a happy man. And then, one day, after 8 years of marriage, I found out that she had been cheating on me with a bad boy, and then she wanted a divorce, and she moved out. So I was utterly devastated, and I felt very defeated and alone. And I decided, I got to figure this out. I got to figure out, what does it take to meet a good woman? What is it going to take to have a long-term, fulfilling, successful relationship? And what is this power that these bad boys have? So the first thing I started doing was studying these bad boys. I actually ran into that guy that she cheated on me with. And I went right up to that guy and I said, dude, I'm not here to kill you. I just want to ask you one thing. What did you do right and what did I do wrong? And he sang like a bird. He told me all sorts of things, probably to brag. And so I really, really started to try to figure out, what is this power that they have? Why are women so addicted to this? So I started getting into dating. I was about 35 at the time, or 36, and I started dating women in their early 30s who were recently divorced, typically single mothers. And I would ask them about their marriage, and I talked to a lot of women. Most of these women left their husband because he was a boring lover. And I would ask them, okay, so what did you go look for? And in almost all of the cases, what these women ended up doing with is getting with a bad boy. And so one of the things I asked them is, all right, so your husband was a lame lover. What was it? Did he have a small penis? And she'd say, well, actually, no. Then I'd ask her, well, this bad boy you were with, why was he a good lover? Did he have a big penis? And she'd go, well, actually, no. So all of my preconceived notions, all the social programming that we'd all grown up with, was starting to fall apart. Mm. And in most of the cases, these women took the bad boy after she left her husband. But in some cases, these women before they left their husbands, but in most cases, it was after they left their husband.
Mm-hmm.
And in almost all of these cases, these women would get with the bad boy, and the sex was extremely exciting. And I started trying to figure out, what are these bad boys doing? And these women would absolutely become addicted to the sex with the bad boy. And then she'd find out that he's actually, in reality, an inconsiderate jerk who's cheating on her. And so she tries to break up with him, but she's addicted to the sex. So she goes back with him for the sex. She gets her fix. And then he cheats on her, and then she breaks up with him. And she goes through this very powerful emotional roller coaster. That can go on for as long as a year. And she finally breaks up with him, and then she's always looking for that. Because once a woman has tasted that, she's addicted. And nothing else will compare. So what I started to figure out, what these bad boys are doing, is they're having a very powerful effect on the woman. They are very comfortable with being very sexual with the woman, and they're very comfortable with dirty talk. They're very comfortable with manhandling her in the bedroom. They're very comfortable telling her things to do.
Right.
The interesting thing is they are very comfortable with looking at her as a very sexual creature.
Hmm.
In the bedroom, they see her very much as a sexual creature, almost objectifying her, which for a woman in the bedroom is actually quite exciting.
Mm-hmm.
However, the problem these bad boys were doing is they would extend that outside of the bedroom. Everything to do with her was like that. He never actually saw her as a unique, special, professional, educated woman. He never saw her for the true person that she is. He only saw her for the sexual creature that she is.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of these bad boys would have the Madonna whore complex. So they would see one woman who was their whore, but they would marry a woman who was a Madonna, but the sex with her would be very boring, very lame, and only for procreation.
Mm-hmm.
So then I looked at, well, what are the problems that I was doing? The mistakes that I was doing is I was being a classic nice guy, where I was very respectful and all that stuff to my wife. I could see her as a special person that she is. I was capable of doing that with the women that I dated after my divorce.
Mm-hmm.
But I wasn't doing those things that get her really excited sexually. You know, objectifying her, manhandling her, talking dirty in the bedroom, getting her excited about doing taboo things with me. I couldn't do those things. So what the bad boys were doing, they were doing a lot of things right, but they were doing a lot of things wrong. And then the nice guys are doing a lot of things right, but doing a lot of things wrong. So I just borrowed what the bad boys were doing right and kept the nice guy part of me that was doing things right. And it's a delicate balance, and it all has to do with context.
Mm-hmm.
Context is critically important. That outside of the bedroom, you have to be the classic nice guy in a lot of ways, in that you are able to see her for the unique individual that she is. You get to know her as the person that she is. You can actually have an emotional connection with her. You can be communicative with her. You can appreciate her. She can feel appreciated and special. But inside the bedroom, you absolutely have to treat her like the sexual creature that she is.
Mm-hmm.
And that was a tough adjustment for me. I've been raised with all the same social programming that you've been raised with all of the guys that we know have been raised with, all our clients.
Right.
Especially men who've been raised by single mothers, they end up being classic nice guys. They're doing a lot of things right, but they're really missing on a lot of the other things.
Mm-hmm.
So the first thing that I had to understand, and it's one of the things that surprised me the most, is that women actually are extremely sexual creatures. I started to find out they are far more sexual than men. Mm-hmm. I would listen to these women's stories, and I knew enough to not listen to what they were saying, but instead looked for how they reacted to things in their life. So, you know, don't ask a woman what a woman wants. She'll tell you what she wants you to hear. But instead, look at women really react to. So that's what I was looking for in their stories. That's amazing what they were reacting to. It was became glaringly obvious to me that women are really highly sexual creatures. They're far more horny than I ever imagined. Extremely horny.
Mm-hmm.
Sexuality is much more important to women than it is to men, believe it or not. And it permeates so much of their life. So that was the first major changing point for me, was coming to terms with the fact that women are such highly sexual creatures.
Mm-hmm.
Another thing that really surprised me was women's capability for pleasure was far beyond anything that I ever imagined was possible. It eventually got to the point where I finally figured out, well, it's just limitless. They are far more capable of pleasure than a man. Far more.
Mm-hmm. And by pleasure, you're saying just talking about sexual pleasure and the experience of sexual pleasure in the bedroom?
Yes, sexual pleasure in the bedroom. Absolutely. That is the most outstanding point. But also for women, it affects so much of their life that being with somebody who really excites them has much more an effect on all aspects of their life than it does with a man.
Mm.
Very much an important part of a woman. So I first had come to terms with the fact that women are highly sexual creatures. They actually want to have sex. Sure, they'll never let a man think that. But when you look at what they actually respond to, oh yeah, they definitely want sex. They are very horny creatures. So I figure, all right, if that's the way they want it, I'll do that. So I started doing the things that the bad boys do, and I had permission to do it because I finally understood that women actually are highly sexual creatures, and they want you to do these things. They actually want to have sex, and they want it to be exciting. It's very easy for women to get sex, but they are absolutely not interested in that. What's very difficult for a woman is to get good sex. That is so difficult for a woman to find.
Mm.
And then when they find it, well, it's extremely addicting to them.
What do you consider to be the most important components of that good sex that she's looking for?
The most important component, and this is the fundamental rule, that for women, sex is entirely mental.
Mm.
Ultimately, it is entirely mental. It has nothing to do with size. It has nothing to do with what the guy looks like. It all has to do with how he affects her mind. And this really blew away a lot of social programming for me. I thought it had to do with how hung he was, how good looking he was, how muscular he was. But a lot of these bad boys, they weren't necessarily good looking. They weren't necessarily muscular. Some were, some weren't. It all had to do with how he affected her mind. And female sexuality ultimately is entirely mental. It's all about having a powerful effect on her mind.
Would you say that this, I guess we can kind of bridge from here what we're talking about now to more of the topic of this, and what we wanted to talk about was getting her to do those taboo things. I know a lot of guys find it's a source of, it's almost like a source of power for them. You know, if they can get a woman to do these dirty, dirty things, he feels empowered as a man, or he feels like he's, you know, his virility is validated in a lot of ways.
Well, absolutely. Getting a woman to do taboo things with a man is very validating for a man. It makes them feel masculine. It makes them feel like a man. It's very important to a man for his woman to do these taboo things. Absolutely.
So what does a woman need in order to allow herself to be, as you know, you say in a lot of your programs, slutty in the bedroom? What are the prerequisites that we need to set up so that she can do those taboo things, or what are some of the things the guys need to work on in advance to set it up?
The most important thing, absolutely the most important thing, is the man must assume all responsibility for anything that goes on. She cannot be held accountable for it. It cannot be her idea. She cannot be blamed for it. He has to be the one who assumes all responsibility, because women so much want to get slutty in the bedroom with their man, but they do not want to be a slut. And the way they can do that is in the bedroom, if they simply follow his commands, well, he's the one who told her to do it. So she is not held responsible for what happens. Therefore, she can get slutty without being a slut. So absolutely, the man must have complete responsibility for everything that happens. And that means that, number one, he is completely accepting of the fact that she loves to get slutty, and it's actually a good thing, and he does that by telling her how much he loves that she is responsive to him, and that is her reward. And he has to lead. He absolutely has to be the one who says, who tells her what to do. By telling her what to do, and by being a strong, confident leader, she is going to follow, and she does not have to be held responsible for what happens. So absolutely, he has to be the one who is responsible for everything happening, and he has to be the one telling her to do it, and then he has to reward her for her good behavior by telling her how much he loves, how she is so responsive to him. And that way, she can be led into any taboo activity.
You know, it's interesting when you said that. We've talked about this subject several times in the past, but I caught something this time that I wanted to point out, and I'd like to know what you think about it. It almost feels in a way that we're setting up kind of a valid role-playing situation in a lot of ways, where the woman can kind of distance herself or kind of give herself the psychological distance from, like you said, not being a slut, but acting slutty. So she's allowed that kind of distance from it. It's almost like she's playing a role in a little way, and the guy's also playing
his
role.
Yes, that's a very important point, because women are sexually submissive creatures. The vast majority, like 99% of them, are sexually submissive creatures. They love to be sexually submissive. They love to be told what to do. And this falls into that. This fulfills her role to be sexually submissive. Extremely important that women are sexually submissive. It requires that the man lead. It requires that the man be sexually dominant.
What about the trust element, the trust and safety element in terms of a woman's feeling that for, obviously, the guy she's with?
No, absolutely there has to be trust there. There absolutely has to be trust. But that's pretty easy to get, just simply be trustworthy. And when a woman is going out with a man, she is going to want to trust him, because she knows she needs to feel that trust in order to feel all the things that she wants to feel. So she's going to be basically cautiously optimistic, let's say. She'll give you the benefit of the doubt. All you have to do is be trustworthy, and the trust will follow, because she wants it to be there.
I was going to say that, you know, if you think about the situations where a bad boy or the guy that's almost abrasively self-interested, where he gets the woman to do these sort of things. Another guy might say that, or a nice guy might look at that and go, but wait a minute, you know, he's not exactly being a trustworthy guy necessarily, but he's setting up a framework of something there, that a woman is feeling that it's okay for her to go into those zones. And I'm not sure if it's a by virtue of his confidence and, you know, extreme.
Well, let me comment on something. All right, nice guys say, well, that boy is not trustworthy. Of course he's not. But she doesn't know that up front. The bad boys come across, and they seduce her in a manner that she thinks that he is trustworthy. He doesn't show his true colors. No, of course not. She doesn't find out that he cannot be trusted until later. These bad boys, you know, women like them because bad boys are protective, okay? Women think that bad boys are protective, but they later find out that the bad boy is actually possessive. Women like the bad boy because he comes across as being very confident, but in actuality, he's very paranoid because he thinks another bad boy is going to steal her away just like he stole her away. And women think that bad boys are very much in control, when in actuality, they later find out that he's very much a controlling person. So women don't know these things up front. The bad boy appears, first of all, as being very trustworthy. It's not until later that she finds out that he cannot be trusted. Now, the advantage that the nice guy has, well, he's naturally trustworthy. Right? We were raised to be classic nice guys. We're very trustworthy. So getting trust is not a problem. What's the problem for the nice guy is turning into a bad boy in the bedroom.
So that's a big question, guys, is do you have to be a bad boy to get women to open up sexually? And if not, how?
No, you don't have to be a bad boy to get her to open up sexually. When you start dating a woman, she's going to be cautiously optimistic. She wants it to go sexual. She wants it to go sexually. That's why she keeps going out on dates with you. So you don't have to be a bad boy to get her interested in getting sexual. And you don't have to be a bad boy to do any of these things, but you do have to do those things that lead her mind, and that it absolutely in the bedroom, in order for her to be responsive to you, you have to lead, you have to be sexually dominant. You have to be very comfortable with her sexuality. And this is another thing we need to talk about, is the nice guy, he absolutely has to get to the point where he is very comfortable with his own sexuality, that he's comfortable with the fact that he's a sexual person, and that it's okay. Only then is he going to be able to be comfortable with her sexuality. And the nice guys need to understand that women are completely comfortable with their sexuality for the most part, certainly the emotionally healthy ones. They want to get sexual. They are sexual creatures. Sexuality is extremely important for a woman. Women are highly sexual creatures, and the nice guys have got to come to terms with that. They have to be comfortable with the fact that she is a highly sexual creature. That's a very, very key fundamental ability that guys have to have.
You explained that you know, a guy has to take that leadership role. He has to take the onus of responsibility in the bedroom, which is absolutely true. And I think a lot of guys don't understand that's a part of that dominance. And a lot of nice guys have a problem with that dominance aspect. Can you explain a little bit more about how a nice guy can get that dominance in the bedroom?
Yeah, absolutely. Nice guys have a real problem being dominant in the bedroom, and the bad boys have no problem with that. In fact, they're very dominant in the bedroom. They're very fluent in that. Absolutely, in the bedroom, the man has to be telling her what to do. determine what happens and when. He absolutely has to be the one who decides on everything. And he gets her there by leading her. Also, he doesn't give her what she asks for. Because if she asks for something and then he does it, that means she's driving, not him. Never, ever do that.
Mm-hmm.
When she asks for something, register that in the back of your mind, and at your own pace, at your selection of time, then you give that to her. Always, the man has to be leading in the bedroom. Absolutely. And that means telling her what to do, deciding when things are going to happen, and not being reactive to her.
And there's a certain element that he has to also have the plan in advance. He's really got to be thinking about that in advance, right?
This is a state of mind that you always have when you go into the bedroom. Absolutely. It is true that when you go into the bedroom, you can have a strategy, a high-level strategy of where you want it to go.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, things are going to change based on what actually happens. Also, things are going to change based on her level of responsiveness to you. So you are always aware of her. You are always flexible to adjust. And you're always able to go down different avenues if something needs to be worked on. Absolutely. But remember, you know, going into the bedroom, one of the things that women are going to do is they almost subconsciously, some of them do it consciously, some of them do it subconsciously, they're going to start being the dominant one. Well, that's the first thing that you need to stop. Do not let her be the dominant one. Now, they will do this in order to, for two reasons. Number one, they've always been with nice guys, and the only time things get exciting is when she leads, because somebody's got to lead, and he wasn't able to lead, so she would lead just to make it exciting, but it's not what she wants to do. So much she'll do out of habit in the bedroom, she'll want to start leading. That's the first thing that you need to stop. And she needs to see this, because she needs to know that you're actually going to take the lead. Well, the first thing to do is stop her from trying to lead. Critically important.
What, there's, I'm sure a lot of guys that want to know, and, you know, I've talked about this back in my bad boy program. What is the vulnerability that bad boys have that that nice guys can exploit and leverage to their own advantage? I think a lot of nice guys want to know that so that they can, you know, basically beat out the bad boy and basically be a better guy in the bedroom.
Well, the bad boys make a lot of mistakes. I've already talked about their weak points, right? They're not protective. They're actually possessive. They're not in control. They're actually controlling. They're not confident. They're actually paranoid. And a lot of these guys, the bad boys, have the Madonna whore syndrome. And actually, a lot of these bad boys are the biggest skirt-hugging mama's boys out there. You know, it's amazing the way they tug on the skirt of their own mother. It's crazy. You know, calling their mother every day, whatever. To the point where they're very dependent on their own mother and acceptance from her, because they never did have a healthy relationship with her growing up for whatever reason, the background that they grew up from. But you don't have to compete with the bad boys. They already blow themselves out, okay? And any girl that you're dating, if she had a previous bad boy, you don't have to badmouth the bad boy. You don't have to cut him down. She's going to do that. She's going to do that. There's no point in competing with a bad boy. Just wait until he blows himself out. What women want, they want a bad boy in the bedroom, but a nice guy in the living room. And that's what the bad boys are unable to do. They're unable to be normal human beings in the living room. They're unable to see her as the unique person that she is. They're not able to really get to know her for who she is. So you don't have to compete with a bad
Yes,
when you get with a woman and you're a bad boy in the bedroom and a good guy in the living room, she's fucked. She's not going to even look at another man.
It's funny the way you mentioned that. I saw this clip. Jen, my girlfriend, had pointed out to me. It's on the 60 Minutes. If you or anybody has that app on their iPad, you can look this up. It's a piece they did on Italian guys called, and they're called in Italian slang, they're called mamoni. And what it means is they're kind of mama's boys in a way. But these guys were, it was funny because some of them had a little bit of a bad boy edge to them. And actually, most of them did have a bad boy edge to them. But like you're saying, David, they were basically clinging to mom and the home. And it's funny because it's much more socially accepted over there for guys to do this. A lot of these guys, even they already had their own apartments, yet they would mail or they would ship their clothes back to their mother to be washed and cleaned and pressed. And the mother would gladly do this. Or they still lived at home and did this stuff. And it was really amazing to me that this is like, you know, the kind of guy that I try to advise guys not to be. But they might miss the point that these mamoni have exactly what you're talking about, David. They're just clinging too much still to their moms. They may have that roguish bad boy aspect, but they still don't have the maturity in there.
Right, exactly. So very true.
So when we talk about getting her to do taboo things in the bedroom, is there any, what are their components are to that? Is there anything else? I don't want to talk about strategies or techniques per se, but what are the big high-level things the guys need to be aware of that a woman needs?
At the high level, okay, you absolutely, absolutely must take things a little baby step at a time, okay? And you cannot progress to the next step until you get the first step working. Now, the first thing that you have to work on is her responsiveness. You absolutely need to work on her responsiveness. If there is not responsiveness, there cannot be progress. You cannot go to the next step. Now, the first thing is you've got to be giving her orgasms. Without orgasms, there is no progress. You're not going to be able to move forward. You absolutely must be giving her orgasms. And that starts typically with clitoral orgasms. You got to make that working. If she is not having clitoral orgasms with you, you cannot proceed. You have got to get that working. Orgasms are going to be the momentum to move things forward. After you get clitoral orgasms working, then you have to get vaginal orgasms working. Absolutely. And you have to get vaginal orgasms working in intercourse. And it has nothing to do with size. Remember, it's all the mind. It's all about affecting her mind. But you absolutely, positively have to get vaginal orgasms in intercourse working. If you don't have that working, you don't have anything. If you don't have that working, sex is all about you. It's not about her. Once you have that working, then you have some serious momentum to move forward. You have to get her responsiveness working. You absolutely have to get that working. If you don't have that working, you cannot progress. Now, once you have that working, then you can go in all sorts of directions, but you must take it one step at a time.
When you say when you're talking about vaginal orgasms, I know there's some guys that may not be familiar, but through the course of the program, I did explain the difference between G-spot, deep vaginal, and clitoral orgasms. Now, are you saying, I want to clarify this for the guys, that clitoral orgasms are not enough, that they need to be seeking that as the goal, or what's the potential that we're talking about? Because some guys find it very challenging to give women these added depths of orgasm, if you will, with women.
Well, that's actually very easy to do. Now, clitoral orgasms, they're really easy to do. And no, that is not enough. You know, she can give herself clitoral orgasms. That's no biggie. All right, definitely, you've got to be giving her clitoral orgasms. Because maybe she can give herself clitoral orgasms, but when she's with a man, she can't have them. So you absolutely need to get that working before you progress anywhere. But that is not enough. Not even nearly. Absolutely not. You have to get vaginal orgasms working. And this is one thing that the bad boys were really good at. A lot of these women that I talk to, addicted. That's only one of the many things. And it was not because of the size, because her ex-husband had a bigger penis anyway. It had to do with the fact that the bad boy would lead her mind. He would be dominant. He would talk dirty. He would manhandle her. He would tell her what to do. He would treat her like a piece of property in the bedroom, which is actually very exciting for a woman. And she was actually absolutely able to let go. She was able to mentally let go. She just let go of all those fucking sabotaging beliefs that she had. And she was able to escape and totally let go, emotionally let go, mentally let go. And then she had vaginal orgasms in intercourse because he led her mind. And he took responsibility for things because he was the one leading. He was the one telling her what to do. You absolutely must get her to the point where she's having vaginal orgasms in intercourse. Without that, you have nothing.
Now, I also wanted to clarify that there comes a point, though, I think, that once you're satisfying a woman like you're talking about, David, once you've established this pattern, that there are times that the orgasms can you can comfortably every so often let go of the need to give her the orgasm, because sometimes women really want to have that connection. They don't necessarily have the goal orientation that a lot of guys have with orgasm. Isn't there a place where they get to that as well, as long as you've established that pattern of being able to do that for her and doing it regularly?
Well, you need to get into the pattern where she knows that you can give her a vaginal orgasm at any time that you want. She has to know that. That has to be proven. You can just come home from work and she's working at the sink, and you should be able to just go up behind her, lift her skirt, pull down her panties, start going at it. And she quickly has a vaginal orgasm in intercourse. She has to know that that can happen. That gives you a sexual threat. You then become a sexual threat, which is critically important. She knows that at any time you can just take her and she will totally lose control. That's extremely exciting for her. Now, there are going to be times when you deny her of orgasms, and it's only because you must absolutely be in complete and absolute control of all of her orgasms. You, the man, must be in complete and absolute control of all of her orgasms at all times. That means that sometimes you simply deny her. That's all part of the big game.
And I know a lot of guys may hear some of this and be a little bit like, wow, you know, this seems really extreme, especially if you look at it in light of a lot of how the media presents women and the media presents things. I mean, you look at television shows and the unrealistic way that, you know, a woman's sexual experience can sometimes be portrayed in these shows. What would you say to guys to help them kind of break free of this mindset that would, you know?
Yeah, I would tell them, fuck that. Don't listen to media.
Turn off the TV, man. It's just doing you no good.
Don't listen to media. Watch the bad boys. Do what the bad boys are doing. It fucking works. The media is a bunch of bullshit. It's just the same old bullshit social programming that has held us down all our lives.
Man, it's
fuck
funny.
That shit.
It's funny because it's held not only women but men back in its pursuit of whatever, you know, in our society, the whole capitalist thing. But we don't need to get all political.
Here's another thing too: is, you know, women are frustrated by the fact that media and society has turned men into such complacent nice guys. But women are also mad at the nice guys for not doing what they're supposed to do, which is lead in the bedroom. So women are frustrated with all of this, but they're still holding men accountable for why men are not having an effect on women. Women are still holding men accountable for that.
Yeah.
But you have to see how social programming protects women, right? It protects women. It portrays women as being innocent and proper and all this and that, which women are. In the workplace, in the living room, at family gatherings, and this is all good. But man to know that in the bedroom, she doesn't want to be proper. She doesn't want to be innocent. She wants to be naughty. She wants to get slutty.
Yeah.
But social programming protects her. Remember, women don't want to be sluts.
Mm-hmm.
They want to get slutty, but they don't want to be sluts. So social programming protects their image.
Now, last question here, Dave. This is great stuff, by the way. I want guys to understand a little bit about, they may be coming from a nice guy persona like you're talking about. A lot of guys do. I know I did for a long time. You've experienced that. How does a guy, when we're talking about getting her to do taboo things in the bedroom, it might feel like a quantum leap to ask or direct a woman to that place he wants to go, whether it's, you know, bondage, maybe it's, any number of things you can do in the bedroom that can be
right.
A little
let's
bit
take
strange.
That for example. Okay, yeah. Guys might think it's a quantum leap.
Yep.
Too fucking bad. Just fucking do it. All right. Yeah. And you have permission to do it.
Yeah.
Women are highly sexual creatures. They are sexually submissive. They want you to take the lead. You have permission. I, David Shade, sex expert, and Carlos Zuma, pickup expert, grant upon you permission to do this. Go ahead and fucking do it.
That's what
and
I need to do.
And bondage is a great example, all right? That's
yeah.
a perfect example.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll give you a very, very simple, easy way to start. In the bedroom, when you are undressing her, okay, so let's say you're in the bedroom. You kiss her. You kiss her passionately. Then you put one arm behind her neck and another arm behind the small of her back, and then you kiss her passionately, and then you back her up against the wall, but you let your elbows hit the wall really hard, so you pull away right before she hits the wall. Your elbows hit the wall really hard, then you return to kissing her passionately as if she is so hot that you cannot help yourself. You are overtaken with desire for her, and you kiss her passionately. And then, let's say she's wearing a T-shirt. You pull the T-shirt up over her head, but you leave it on her arms.
Mm-hmm.
All right? So now her arms are restrained.
Mm.
And you hold the T-shirt at her wrists with one hand, and you return the other hand to the small of her back and continue passionately kissing her. Well, she's already lightly restrained. That's extremely exciting for a woman. Just fucking do it.
That's a great,
all right, now later,
that's a great technique.
Go ahead.
I was going to say, that's a great technique right there, what you just talked about. Great
yeah.
example. Example of just how to progress into it, and you know, you'll immediately feel the response and be validated right there that you're doing the right thing.
Yeah, you're going to find that she's kissing you back a lot more passionately once you do that.
Mm-hmm.
And then later, while she's lying naked on your bed, you can take a silk necktie from your dresser, if anybody still has silk neckties. If you don't, get some, because they're fucking awesome, all right? And then you do not ask her, may I tie you up? No, fuck no, you don't ask her, because that would make her feel like she's responsible for everything.
Mm.
You must assume responsibility. You simply return to the bed with said silk necktie, and you simply start tying it around her wrist. And you simply say, you would look really hot to me tied up.
Mm-hmm.
That's right. Now, what this does is it tells her that you're going to tie her up, which gives her a moment to object if she wants to. Also, you take responsibility. You're the one who's doing it. And you simply tie her wrist to the headboard. Then you get another silk necktie, and you tie the other wrist to the other headboard, other end of the headboard.
Mm-hmm.
And then her arms are restrained. That's extremely exciting for her. But notice how you took responsibility. Now, you probably aren't going to get there until you've already gotten orgasms working.
Mm-hmm.
But it is possible to leverage that in order to get orgasms working.
Mm-hmm.
Remember, you have to affect her mind. It's all a mind fuck, right? Now, when she is restrained like that, and she really feels that you're dominant, you're leading, oh, yeah, the chances of her having an orgasm are already instantly, massively increased.
So, yeah, we're enhancing it all by the way it's all intertwined is you're increasing the psychological factors as well as the situational factors to kind of create that whole, I don't know, the great, I hate to use a pun here, but thrust forward, as it were, to get the result you want.
Exactly. It's all a big mind fuck.
Dave, this has been some great stuff. I appreciate the, especially covering this topic. It's always great when we can come up with fresh perspectives and fresh angles on this, because this is something that I think hits the spot for a lot of guys that are going to be in this program. They're going to want to understand how sexual power works, not only from communication, but just the, you know, what we're talking about here in the bedroom and establishing that. And you hit on some very important topics, not the least of which is that assumption of responsibility that a guy must have in order to play the right role. Now, guys, I set up a link for you to get more information about David's stuff, because it's highly recommended. And, you know, I've probably sent you information on his programs before. I've set up basically carloszuma.com/David Shade. That's HTTP, of course, /carloszuma.com/David Shade. David, what are, tell the guys a little bit about some of your programs and some of the ones that they can you know, dive into to get much more in-depth information on some of the stuff we've talked about today.
Yeah, absolutely. Definitely use Carlos's link to get to my site, and that will give you a wonderful offer for a free CD. And use that link and go to my website and get that free CD, and I will tell you in more detail all about this overall important framework of affecting her mind, to where you can take it a step at a time and bringing her to being highly sexual and doing highly taboo things with you. So start with that free CD, and that will get you familiar with my programs and this whole mental framework.
Yeah, definitely highly recommended. David's CD is awesome, as are the programs. I've been working with him for quite a while, and I can definitely attest to the fact that David knows exactly what he's talking about in this field, and it's something that every guy needs to know. It's not an optional thing. You know, you can't skip this part of your education and expect to be a complete and whole alpha man, as it were, without it. So highly recommended. Go on over to www.carloszuma.com/David Shade, DavidShade, just like it sounds, David Shade. And David, I really appreciate you being a part of this program and the masterclass portion of Alpha Sexual Power and presenting for us today. It's been great, some great information, man.
Well, thank you, Carlos. I'm very honored to be interviewed by you, and I'm very honored to be speaking to your clients, sir.
Awesome. Thank you again, and we will definitely be talking again on very soon. Thanks, guys.
Thanks a lot, Carlos. All right. Talk to you soon, man.